Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now. 210-599-5555.
All right, and a very good Saturday morning to everybody out there listening, at least those of y'all that are awake this dark, early, rainy morning out there. Oh, wish we'd just get some real rain instead of the drizzle that's coming down, but I don't know about all of y'all, but I'm very happy just to see any moisture coming down. I got about a quarter of an inch overnight up in Bernie, which is a good start, but, well, we need some of those real, what my grandfather used to call gully washers, put some water back into the river and back into the aquifers and fun things like that. But we're here to talk gardening for next 3.5 hours. I call this the smart people's half hour because I don't have to take another break until 6 o'clock. So if you've got a question that might require a little more discussion, or shoot, for that matter, just want to get up and talk early, so you can get on with your day, as James is waiting. He's going to be first in line, and but love to hear from you. 210-599-5555. And I have lots of things to talk about, but the most important things of all are what are on your mind. So give me a call. You know the number, 210-599-5555. Having said that, let's say good morning, James.
Good morning, Bob. How are you doing?
I'm off to a good start. How about yourself?
Oh, pretty good. You know, I live out here in Cypress, Texas, northwest of Houston.
Uh-huh.
And we call them frog stranglers.
Yeah, that's another one of the, I hate to say it, the old-timers expressions, but I'm ready for one of those. That's for certain. It's y'all have had a little bit more moisture than we have, and of course you don't have quite the same aquifer system, so water is not as much of an issue, but wherever you are in Texas, if it's not an issue today, it's going to be one of these days. So anyway, good to hear from you this morning.
My question is, too, real quick. I can't grow big bell peppers. Mine are small. And then the second question is, have you heard, you're probably old as I am, have you heard of the grub pot, G-R-U-B? I am looking for those old white grub pots. They don't make them anymore. The guy died.
Oh, I know. Old Jesse Grubb. And I don't know if you've ever seen the pictures, say, one of his ads with, he was a fairly large man. And he had some print ads where he's sitting in one of those big old white grub pots.
Mm-hmm.
And no, you know, Jesse passed away, and the OSHA people just about put Marshall Pottery out of business. So we used to have about 5 or 6 people that made good clay pots in Texas, and the grub pots were one of the very best, but those people came in, and I don't know, I think it was going to cost some of the others upwards of $10 million to retool, to bring their plants up to what they considered safe standards. Oh. Not that they'd ever been in a plant before, but I think the combination of that and losing Jesse, just pretty much all of our pots shut down. Get clay pots now, most of them are coming out of Italy. I'm not even sure there's standard clay pots that anybody in Texas makes them, but you know, if you're fortunate enough to find the grub pot, somebody's you probably have to go to an antique store to find them these days, because that company, he hadn't been around, and the difference too was where the clay was coming from. Jesse was getting the white clay out of Arkansas, and with what freight rates and all, even if there's somebody out there that had the kilns and things to make more pots, I'm not sure they'd be paying the money to bring the clay down. So those are just, like, you know, a lot of things, the quality that used to be there just isn't anymore. And but I'm like you, I keep my eyes open. If I see one at a reasonable price anywhere, I'm going to pick it up, because they were certainly some of the best made pots we've ever had in Texas.
You know, when I was living as a kid in San Antonio, it was like that was the pot for the hill country, the white growth pot.
Oh, yeah.
It blended well. And I thought that clay came out of Marshall. I didn't know it came out of Arkansas.
Yeah, no, the red clay came out of Marshall. which is, of course, where, you know, so much of our good terracotta-colored pots, so many of our good terracotta-colored, say that 10 times in a row at 5:30 in the morning. But, you know, they it was totally different source and just totally different clay. But I think it's probably in the firing process. The Marshall and the Grub pots both would stand up to freezes. So many places and so many local concrete manufacturers, as a matter of fact, their materials will absorb some moisture, and if you get some moisture followed by a freeze, they just flake and fall apart. That's what's wrong with Mexican pottery, and that's it's so much of the local concrete. I mean, we get our concrete statuary and things all the way from Pennsylvania, where they know what winters are like. But the Grub and the Marshall pots were both just set very high standards for quality, and sadly neither one of them are out there. The Italian terracotta is pretty good. There's some fired pottery coming out of Vietnam now that's just absolutely outstanding, but nobody's come up with anything like the old white Grub pot, I'm very sorry to say.
Yeah, I know. I'm upset, too, and it's hard enough just to find regular clay pots, like you said. So let me ask you the first question, bell peppers. Why are mine so small?
It probably has more to do with weather than anything else. If you're growing a bell that has the potential to be big, like Keystone or California Wonder or those, they have the potential to be big, but they only make big peppers early in the season and late in the season. Mid-season, they're going to shrink down to, you know, half the size, but I don't usually recommend planting hot peppers until the weather starts approaching hot. But you need to get your bells and your sweet peppers in early when you get your tomatoes in. And you know, if we have a spring, which we didn't last year, but I'm hopefully we will this year, then April, May, maybe even into early June, you should get big bell peppers. But come June, July, August, what you get, like I say, is going to be a whole lot smaller. It's going to mature a lot faster, which means it's going to turn red in color. Doesn't really affect the flavor, but it certainly affects the texture. So bell pepper is one of those things you want to pick them before they're fully matured. But beyond that, if you're you know, just feeding with good organics and keeping things well watered, bells are also one that will take a little bit more shade than the hot peppers will. But early in the season, I don't worry about it. Mid-season, I'm going to put about 30% shade cloth over the bells and even over my, you know, early fall planted tomatoes. And doing those two or three things, whatever we came up with, those are going to give you bigger bell peppers when the weather is mild. But once we get into hot weather, you can just say goodbye to big bells, unless you live in California or somewhere that it stays cool much later. And, you know, so many folks don't get around to planting their peppers till, oh, maybe late April or even early May. And the hot peppers don't mind that. The serranos and even the shishitos go on producing really well. But your bells, they're just going to really shrink when that weather gets hot.
Okay. So I have already planted mine, so let's see what happens.
Well, you're early in many different ways. You're up early on a Saturday morning and you're getting things off to a good start. I don't know what your weather forecast is. We're even looking at 30s in the hill country here for the next couple of days, but
no.
Yeah, we don't want to see that, that's good, and my experience is that wind is probably as hard or harder, you know, on young vegetable transplants than the cold is. So I'm not really worried about the chill, but if you get those strong north winds, I'm not sure how you do it. I take a piece of row cover. I use the one called Insulate, and I'll cut little strips of it about 18 inches wide. And I even grow my bells in tomato cages. I've just have accumulated so many tomato cages over the years that my bells may grow 4 feet tall. But starting out, I'm going to wrap a piece of that insulate around about the first 18 inches. That cuts off that cold wind, and it really gets little peppers off to a stronger start.
Well, this old man doesn't like cold wind either, so I wrap insulated around me too.
Hey, that works. That works. Are you growing shishito peppers? Have you ever grown shishitos?
No, I've got to try those. Where can you get those at?
You can, well, here we finally talked most all of the big bedding plant producers into growing them. You might, I'm sure somebody like Buchanan's is probably going to have them in Houston, but that's a great little pepper, and it's a very compact plant. I've grown them for 2-3 years ever since they got so popular, and that little plant only gets maybe 18 inches tall, but you may have 30 or 40 or 50 peppers on that little plant, the way it just grows and loads up. And I'm not sure about over in your area, but here they have become, in some restaurants and most all the brew pubs around, it's one of the principal appetizers on the menu. They do what they call blistering them in an iron skillet and then serve them with ranch dressing. And, you know, even at 5:30 in the morning, I'm going to salivate thinking about that, because they're warm enough to, I had an old Cajun friend that used to say, it's warm enough, it's hot enough to have some authority, speaking of spice, but they're warm enough to have some authority, so to speak, but they're not burning you hot. You can sit there and eat, you know, 8 or 10 of them, which I frequently have, I'll have to say. And it's just one of the greatest new peppers that's come along in a lot of years. They've been out for maybe 3 or 4 years now, but they're easy to grow, very, very productive, and if you cook them right, they are sure delicious.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the info.
Well, it's always a pleasure to hear from you early morning. So you get out and have a wonderful weekend and stay safe out there.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you, James. Goodbye. All right. Looks like we've got AJ next in line. Is that AJ or is that Al?
It's Al.
That's Al. Well, good morning, Al. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Bob.
Morning, sir.
Very good. I have a very large peace lily, and my wife would very much like to divide that. Can I do that safely? And if so, how do I do it?
Well, I don't recommend it. I'll put it that way. You can, and what you will do is just basically split the base of it, but you're going to set, if you cut it in two pieces, you're going to set it back. It's going to languish for a while. They just resent, I don't think it's actual cutting them that really hurts them, but they have a real thick fibrous root system and just do so much damage to the roots trying to pull them into two pieces that it'll be a year before it really gets well established again. So unless it's just absolutely too big, I would not suggest dividing it. They're one plant that likes to stay in a smaller pot, does not hurt them to be root bound. They are so widely available now that if she wants a second plant, just go out and buy her one for Easter. But it can be done. The plant will probably survive, but you're going to spend the next 6 months saying, why did I do that?
Okay, that makes sense.
Which variety do you have any idea which variety it is?
It came from a florist, so I simply don't know the answer to that. It was a gift.
Okay. If it has really big, wide leaves, I definitely would not divide that one. That variety is called Sensation, and it wants to be a big plant, and it really resents being broken up. The smaller ones, what you're probably getting out of a florist or somewhere, that one is probably the variety called Mauna Loa, and it can get to be a nice big plant. The longer you leave it undisturbed, the more likely you are to be rewarded with lots and lots of white blooms. So if you can talk her out of dividing it, I would do so. If for whatever reason you feel like you just have to divide it, be sure you follow up watering it in with some Super Thrive, some Garrett juice, and be very careful not to keep it too wet, because when you damage the roots like that, they don't take up the water as quickly. The soil tends to stay moist longer, and of course it's not the water that hurts anything, but if the soil stays too wet, the water drives the oxygen out of the soil, plant's roots have to have oxygen. They're like you and me. Top of the plant takes in carbon dioxide and gives off oxygen, but the roots are, you know, just like other living organisms that have to have oxygen and give off carbon dioxide. So it's when you divide, when you damage roots, the tendency is there that the pot can stay too wet, really reducing the oxygen content and really harming the plant that you're trying to get reestablished. So whatever, if you can't talk her out of it, just watch your watering real carefully after you divide it. And like I say, when you do water it, add a little bit of Super Thrive, a little bit of Garrett juice, and you'll do okay. It'll just take a while for it to come back to its original beauty.
Okay, this one's actually a huge plant. It's probably 4 or 5 feet across.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a big plant.
Well, you, she, whoever can pat yourself on the back for growing one that big and that well. But it's kind of like a Boston fern. The only time I'd really recommend dividing something like that, ultimately it may get to where you've got all the new growth is coming out around the edges of the plant, and the center of the plant is basically died out. That's what happens to big Boston fern baskets. If it gets to that point, then you can divide it. You can break out the center part of it that's just aged out and repot it. But, gosh, if you've got one that big and beautiful, you can still be keeping it in no bigger than a 7-gallon pot, probably a 5-gallon pot. And I would just hesitate to, you know, to break it apart, because that's really going to set it back.
Can you root a cutting on it?
Not really. They're almost exclusively, they produce them through what they call tissue culture, which is a meristematic propagation technique. But there's not any part of the stem which is anatomically structured, so to speak, to be able to root it.
Okay. One last question. I love to plant tomatoes, and last year was not one of my better years for tomatoes except for the cherries.
Right.
Is there a large red tomato that you recommend in particular?
I don't think anybody had real good tomatoes last year, so don't judge your abilities by what last year did to us. That heat was so intense last year. But there are several good big tomatoes in the, you know, in the red group, so to speak. The one that I always plant every year, I'm going to plant celebrities. They are a good flavor. They are a good good size or a slicing tomato, and they're very, very productive. So that's probably my top red tomatoes. I also plant a red tomato called Arkansas Traveler, because Arkansas Traveler continues to produce on into the summer when the nights get hotter. Most of your big fruited tomatoes stop producing as soon as the nights really warm up. I'm usually still picking Arkansas Traveler on the 4th of July, and that's probably a month after celebrities and most of the others start to play out. So that's the second one that I'm going to grow. Beyond that, Better Boy is not a bad tomato. There's, if you just want production, there's a tomato called Tycoon that is a big red tomato. I don't think the flavor is as good on Tycoon, but it's going to give you more pounds of tomatoes than just about anything else you can plant. The other big tomato, well, two other big tomatoes that I really like, there's one that's a high anthocyanin tomato called Purple Cherokee, and it's a little more nutritious, it's very tasty, and it's very productive. So that's going to be another of the big tomatoes in my garden. I also grow one called Lemon Boy. I like the look of it, and it's a little bit sweeter tomato. You don't ever can with a yellow tomato because it's lower acid. But if you want a, you know, if you're a gourmet chef and if you entertain, it's kind of fun to slice up a red tomato and a yellow tomato, and you can make a real pretty presentation that way. Plus, Lemon Boy is just a very delicious tomato, too. So it's more information than you asked for, but don't ever go out and plant 15 of the same thing, because any one of those varieties is going to have an off year every now and then, and the one that didn't do so well last year may be the champion for this year. We just don't know what the weather's going to be, or, you know, and that probably has a lot to do with which one produces better. But if you're only going to plant one, I'd sure plant Celebrity.
Okay, that sounds like good advice. I did think of one more question.
Sure.
We are heavily forested with oaks, and I need to plant some new bedding plants around the front of the house.
Uh-huh.
How would hollies do?
If it's bright enough to cast a shadow, the spiny hollies, the dwarf Burford, if you're looking for one that'll go to about 5 feet, is a good choice. If you're looking for something taller, there's one called Nellie Stevens. There's one called Foster's. They will do okay. They're not going to be as happy as they would with more sun, but do not plant Yaupon holly. That's one of the hollies that takes a, you know, takes a lot of sun. How tall are you looking for these things to grow?
3 to 4 feet would be really ideal.
Okay. Look at a plant called Goldust Acuba, A-U-C-U-B-A. That's another pretty plant that's in that size category that will be very happy in the shade. We have some planted on the front of our nursery here that are the same ones we planted 34 years ago. So they're quite long-lived, and they are very happy in the shade. Another possibility, although it doesn't get quite as big as what you're looking for, there's a new variety of boxwood out there called Baby Gem, G-E-M. And it is it's a real pretty, more compact, and much more shade-tolerant boxwood that will do well in those areas. But if you just want a holly, the dwarf Burford's going to be about the best one. It's going to get between 4 and 6 feet tall. It's dwarf only in comparison to standard Burford, which grows 10 or 12 feet. So if you want a shiny holly, a dwarf Burford's sure the one I would choose.
Thank you. Really appreciate all your recommendations, and I find that when I follow your recommendations, everything turns out really well.
Well, that's a great compliment.
Unless, of course, nature intervenes like last year.
Oh, man, isn't that the truth? Well, I tell people I've made every mistake you can make in the gardening world in my years of doing it, so I'm just trying to keep you from making the same mistakes I've made. But anyway, well, check it out, and if you're going to plant the hollies, be sure you incorporate some compost. Be sure you keep them well mulched, because they do like a little bit better soil than we typically have in most of this area. But you can certainly grow them, and they'll make a pretty plant for you.
Thank you, Bob. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, Al. Thank you, sir. Goodbye. All right. Next in line, I believe, is Randy. Good morning, Randy.
Hey, Bob. It is an honor to talk to you.
Well, my great pleasure. What's going on this morning?
Well, let me give you the situation. I am a 57-year-old man, and this is my first garden ever.
Well, good for you.
However, I've been a fan of yours for about the past 6 or 7 years, so I've been listening to you but not planting anything.
Well, so, I'm glad to know that I keep you entertained, but I'm glad you're getting into the gardening world. At least you'll get something good to eat out of that part of the deal.
Yeah, I'm having fun. I just want a healthier diet, and I've always wanted to garden, and so I decided to finally pull the trigger this year. And immediately ran into a buzzsaw. I live in Floresville on a clay hill, so I decided to do raised beds.
Very good.
And I thought, you know what? I think my best option is to go to Gardenville and get their premium garden soil, which I did. And after I got my beds in and my irrigation system up and I'm ready to start planting, the soil turns out is bone dry, like talcum powder, and won't hold any water. It's completely hydrophobic.
Yeah.
And I have put a sprinkler on it for 6 hours and wet the entire first 16th of an inch of that soil.
Yep.
It just cools up and runs off. If I put holes in it, it runs down the holes and out the bottom.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the company's not the same once Malcolm was out of the picture, and sadly he's passed away now, but not the same company it was. What you're going to need to do, Randy, there are two things that will really improve that soil. The first one, of course, is just good compost. And I probably would buy a bagged compost, because it's going to be a more finished product than what you're going to get at any of the material suppliers. My favorite is one by a company called Nature's Creation. And you're going to find a lot of nurseries around the area. Whereabouts do you live?
Floresville.
Oh, in Floresville. Okay.
Yeah. a little southeast of San Antonio.
Yeah, I know Floresville very well, and sadly we don't have the good nursery we did down there when Virginia Twins was around. If you come into San Antonio, Fanix is probably going to be the closest nursery to you, and I'm pretty sure they carry the Nature's Creation line of products. I mean, would you love to see it shades of green, but I'm not going to ask you to drive all the way up here when Fanix is probably 10 miles closer to you.
I've actually been to Shades of Green a couple of times, and I love going there, and I don't mind at all going there.
Well, Nature's Creation compost will be a great thing to add. The other thing I would add is get how big is your raised bed? How big is your garden going to be?
Four by eight foot deep.
Okay. I would also get some lava sand. Lava is hygroscopic. It's just going to be the opposite of what you have there. In fact, it will even collect some moisture from the air on a humid day. So I probably would put a 40-pound bag of lava sand in each of those beds, and I'd incorporate as much compost as you can and without having it run over the top. And
I've got six beds, four are already in. My plan is to put the two more in, shovel out half of what's in two of the ones I have, and fill them up the other half with whatever you tell me to put in.
It's going to be Nature's Creation. Yeah, Nature's Creation compost. And like I said, I'd add some lava sand. And those are the things that will change the consistency of your soil. Now, other additives, it would be good. You can add a little dry molasses. The best micronutrient source I have found is something called azomite, A-Z-O-M-I-T-E. It's kind of like green sand on steroids. It's just got so much more in it, and you don't have to add a lot. But that and just a little bit of good organic fertilizer, and you should be all set. Are your beds out in a good sunny spot?
Oh, they're very sunny.
Okay, well, that's a good thing. Go ahead.
The only other concern I have with them is they're in a coastal field. I put weed blocker down on top of it. I scalped the coastal, put weed blocker down on top of it, put about 2 inches of rocks on top of that, and then put more weed blocker and then the beds.
Okay.
My only concern is drainage at this point.
Well, after
power through.
Yeah, after 6 months or so, you're going to have smothered the coastal. You're going to have to keep it from wanting to grow back in from the surrounding areas. But at that point, you can take a sharp rod and just punch many, many holes in it. The drainage doesn't concern me as much as the fact that it tends to block out a lot of the oxygen that needs to get in the soil, but that's not the end of the world. But you'll do well with it. Every year, some years are going to be better than others. One thing you may want to do, one thing I did with my garden a few years ago when we started having such intensely hot summers, I actually put a pipe frame up with 3/4 inch iron pipe that I can put a 30% shade cloth over the very middle of the summer, and that has really extended my harvest season on peppers and things like bush beans, tomatoes, cherry tomatoes. They don't even slow down. The bigger tomatoes stop producing when the nights get really hot, but you're going to be amazed at how quickly you're going to fill all those beds up. Just have to decide what you like most. You probably want to go bush cucumbers rather than vining ones. Same thing with squash, just because of the limited space. But golly, it's time to get your beans planted, time to get your tomatoes and peppers in. It's early for okra, but I wouldn't fool with trying to grow things like corn that just take up too much room. And okra is going to be the other one that takes a lot of room. But if you like okra, it's easy to grow. But you're going to enjoy it, and that soil is just going to get better year after year after year. Once you get beyond this initial, stage of getting it in good shape, and be sure and spray it down, wet it down periodically with something like Medina Plus or Medina Soil Activator, because that's really going to start the microbes working in there. And I consider it a lesson learned, but you're not going to keep you from growing a good garden, that's for sure.
Oh, another question. The molasses and azomite. How much stuff put in there.
And you said the beds are 4x6 or 4x8?
4x8.
4x8. I'd put about 2 cups of dry molasses and probably 1 cup of azomite.
Okay. And
probably 2 or 3 cups of good organic fertilizer, Medina's Growing Green or MaestroGrove's Texas Tea or Nature's Creations Premium Lawn Food. All of those are really good fertilizers.
And will I be able to plant immediately?
Absolutely.
Or does this just need to sit and brew a little while?
Unless you're too tired after you get it all mixed up.
You can, you can plant the same.
No, you can plant the same afternoon. No, it's you're ready to plant once you do that.
Okay. And
Randy, let me this. I'm right up to news time, so let me get Greg to put you back on hold, and we'll talk just a little bit more after the newscast. And everybody else, keep listening. Dial if you like, 599-5555. That's area code 210.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now, 210-599-5555.
And we do have a couple of lines open if you want to grab one up. You know how jammed up it gets later in the show and you got those long waits and busy signals. So you'd like to get in early, you know the number, 210-599-5555. We're going to visit a little more with Randy, and then we're going to talk to Kathy. But back to your other questions. Randy, good morning again.
Hey, Bob, thank you for putting me on hold and talking to me some more. That's why I actually set an alarm to get up this morning to call you, because I know you get jammed up.
Wise man. You sound wide awake.
Yeah, not my preference on a Saturday morning, but here
lucky,
I am.
Lucky you.
you know I'm new to all this. I'm gonna start composting as well, which I think I pretty much got a handle on that. I just don't want to. I've already made mistakes, and I don't want to make more. I'm gonna start raising earthworms.
Okay.
I've heard you talk about worm castings a little bit, but you really don't talk about it a lot. Is it the magic that it is purported to be?
It is an outstanding material. It's a really good material. It's a little pricey, but you know, most things that are really top quality cost a little more, but I'd rather see you put in a cubic foot of compost than to see you put in a cup of worm castings. But the two of them together
ideal. I'm gonna raise them.
Yeah.
I'm gonna start raising them. That's for down the road.
And of course, I
got an old bathtub.
Well, you can do that, but you know, each one of those 4x8 beds is going to be basically a worm farm. Long as you're staying organic, long as you're not using toxic chemicals, you can let the worms make their own casting in the soil. Raising worms, it's more complicated than gardening. I'll put it that way. Get a good book on, they call it vermiculture. Be sure you get the right kinds of worms, but it's a great thing to do. And if you've got the time to do it, I'll highly recommend it. But you're going to find that, you know, the kind of vegetable garden you're going to get started is going to take a lot of your time. And you may get to the point you don't want to have to have one more job to do out on a warm summer day. But no, racing earthworms is going to be fine.
I haven't even thought about the fact that I'm about to have six worm beds anyway.
Yeah.
That's not a bad idea.
Worm castings are ideal, as is bat guano. There are a lot of kind of high dollar things out there that will give you a better garden, but it's kind of a cost benefit ratio. I want to produce the best produce possible without breaking the bank in the process. And worm castings are outstanding, and add what you can and grow some more of your own.
Last question, and boy, I hope I didn't screw up, because I got a lot of work into this. I set up a irrigation system. The water that we have that comes out of our tap where I live is highly chlorinated, and mm-hmm. it at best keeps plants alive.
Yep.
Wait until a rain. And we also have a pond that's full of black bass and perch with no animals.
That sounds good.
That is fed by a well that we have, and I set mm-hmm. up an irrigation system on a solar on-demand pump that's coming from that pond.
Perfect.
Is that good water?
Okay,
that's outstanding water. Yeah, that's excellent water. And, you know, if your beds are uphill or upstream from it, the little bit of nutrient leach you're going to get out of the beds is going to create a better aquatic environment for your bass and your perch to grow up big and fat and give you that tug on the line. So, no, that's the best water you could use. And
that's great news.
Yeah.
Because I put a lot of time and expense in setting that up.
Well, you're doing it right, and just being totally honest with you, you're going to have some setbacks. Gardening is always a mixture of successes and failures, and you're going to learn, but you're going to have more successes than you're going to have things that Mother Nature throws at you. But just get your timing down right, plant varieties that grow well in this area. And, and I'll ask you one more question and then we'll move along. But, how does your watering system work? Are you using like drip tubing? How is that water going to be distributed in your beds?
It's drip tape. I've got four lines of drip tape running down the length of each bed.
Okay. That's ideal. That's ideal. If you can, put a little filter somewhere along the line, because you are going to pick up a little bit of solid material, and the drip tape can tend to plug up. I hope on the ends you just did the little trick of folding it over to shut it off, where you can open it up and blow it out periodically, because you're going to get some things collect inside of those tapes. So if you can put a little filter of some sort where the water, in advance of where the water goes in, and just, you know, once a month or so, set your system when it's time to water, just go around, open that end of that tape up and let it flush for 15 seconds, close it up and move on to the next one. And because it's going to be very important that you get even water throughout the bed. Soaker hoses are terrible. There is a product called pressure compensated drip tubing that will work, but your T-tape, which is probably what you have, is going to be just fine.
Outstanding. I told my wife when I had the soil incident, I said, well, I'll just call Bob. Well, no, and she's like, who's Bob? I said, God,
well,
talk about on the radio.
Well, yeah, just call me before you make a mistake. It's amazing how many people will call and say, what should I do? And you give them the answer, and they say, well, what if I've already done it the other way? So yeah, I look forward to helping you.
That soil was so disheartening. I'm ready to plant stuff, and I'm like, this stuff won't hold water. Come on.
Yeah, well, as long as we learn from our mistakes, they're not really mistakes. So don't hesitate to call anytime, Randy. I'll always look forward to helping
you. All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Bye. Goodbye. All right, let's talk to Kathy. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning, Bob. He sounds like all of us. We have you on speed dial.
Well, it's good to talk to you. What's going on in your world today?
I should have written it down. I have a million times. What is the ratio of vinegar and orange oil for a weed killer?
For a weed killer, you want to use 2 ounces of orange oil to a gallon of vinegar. And then I like to add just a little bit of dish soap and just a little bit of molasses to it. It seems to make it even more effective, probably. Oh, just a very scientific measurement. Just a squirt of dish soap and maybe a tablespoon of molasses, and you will make a safe but very effective weed killer.
Great. Okay. And I'm just starting raised beds, too, because I live in sand. And I'm telling you, shoveling that soil in, I mean, it's going to be nice not to bend, but the shoveling it in is going to be the problem.
Well, I'm jealous of being able to do that, because when you live toward the hill country, there's this stuff called limestone. And fortunately, my garden is down in some good alluvial soil, but anybody that's ever tried to dig a post hole or something like that would a whole lot rather do it down south than they would in the hill country. So it's a little bit of work, but you've got some good things going for you. Just build that sand up with good organic material and you'll grow a wonderful garden.
Thank you so much, Bob. I wrote down everything you told him, so I will be doing it in mine also.
Oh, well, very good. Well, is there anything else I can help you with this morning?
The rain is perfect, isn't it?
If it just keeps it up. I had 22 one-hundredths in my gauge when I left very early this morning, so I'd rather have 2.2 inches and I'd rather have 10 inches if you want to know the truth, but it is certainly nice to get some good moisture. And it's good for a lot of things. It's, of course, going to help the native grasses. It should give us a prettier wildflower season. Just keep it coming. I hope we don't get that tap shut off for 6 months at a time like we did last year.
We went out wildflower looking the last couple of days. Oh, there's some gorgeous. But the Indian blanket flower doesn't seem to be in abundance like usual.
Well, it's a later flower. It's a Gallardia, and it typically doesn't start into its real beauty till probably a month or 6 weeks after the paintbrush and the bluebonnet show up. So be patient. Have an idea. It's one of the hardiest wildflowers too, but it always is going to be a little later. So don't jump the gun on expecting it to be out there. It'll be there.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. Have a great morning.
You do the same, Kathy. Thanks for the call. Goodbye. All right. You know the number, 210-599-5555. I'm going to pause here for a moment and talk about Rhonda's Nature's Way. Had the pleasure of visiting with Rhonda last week and actually got to, her mom was there, her daughter-in-law. It's just a family operation out at Rhonda's Nature's Way. And talk about a family that has done so much to help so many people over so many years. I really rely on Rhonda as my go-to person when I've got things like, well, little allergy problems. I take her seasonal allergy relief, all those other little issues that come up. There's probably a natural solution for them out there, and Rhonda can certainly help you with that. And hey, if you want a real experience, sign up for a reflexology session. You'll be amazed at how it makes your feet and your whole body feel. In fact, I've given reflexology sessions as gifts to some friends. I enjoyed it so much. She also has the very best in supplements, the very best in vitamins, has wonderful things that will help you stick to your diet. If you just have to have that taste of something sweet, she's got things that you will love that have no refined sugar at all in them, just a minimum of carbs. Rhonda does so many things well, but the best thing she has is the knowledge that she and her staff can share with you to help solve the issues that you may have, whether it's digestion or sleep or mood, or you just simply want to feel better, get rid of those minor aches and pains. Rhonda can help you. Her store is open Monday through Saturday, always closed on Sunday, but Monday through Saturday you will find her over there in the shopping center at the corner of I-10 and Callahan, kind of across the parking lot from Sprouts. If you want to live better naturally, you really need to get to know the good folks at Rhonda's Nature's Way.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 1071.
All right, back to gardening on a nice rainy Saturday morning. Golly, we need the rain so badly. And right now it's just like a heavy drizzle. I'm sure when you look at that radar, it's mainly yellow instead of that red stuff. But we don't need the hail. We don't need the damaging winds. But, boy, we could sure use a good, good, thorough soaking. Looking at the log, it looks like we are my next two callers are going to be Dolores and Everett. Dolores is up first. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Do you talk to yourself all the way from Bernie to San Antonio in the morning so your voice is good?
Well, no. I guess, as we always say about radio, you just have to sound awake. You don't have to look awake. I may speak to my puppy dog a couple of times or two on the way in, but I tell you, this morning I was just concentrating on that semi in front of me. That road is in such horrible shape. You can't see the stripes. They don't have any reflectors on it anymore, so I was telling my engineer this morning, I just tucked in behind a big truck that I figured could see a little bit better than I could and drove slowly and safely coming in. But no, it's, I don't know. It seems like my voice wakes up before my brain does. So anyway.
I have to talk to myself when I get up so that I have a voice to talk on the radio.
Well, there's nothing wrong with talking to yourself. If you start answering yourself, I'm gonna start wondering about you. But as long as you're just talking to yourself, that's not a bad thing.
Well, I'm 82 years old, and I do that at times.
No, you're that many years young. You're not old. I can hear it in your voice.
Oh, okay, then. I have some questions about red oak trees. I know you've spoken about the oak wilt and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. We have, we're blessed with a new mayor, and he blessed the city of Freer with 1,000 red oak trees.
Okay.
It's a beautiful tree. So I'm wondering, I don't have good soil to plant in, and I'm wondering if I could in a molasses tub.
You're looking at a tree that wants to grow 40 feet tall and 40 feet wide and have a trunk that's 24 inches across. So if I were going to, here's what I would do, and that's an excellent question, by the way. If I were facing what you're facing, I would probably maybe get a molasses tub, but I would cut the bottom out of it and put it where you want it to be, because ultimately, if you just plant it in a molasses tub, the tree's going to outgrow that molasses tub, and then you've got a 500-pound root ball that you're trying to manage to move around, and that's not going to be easy regardless of your age. But if you would take that molasses tub, put it where you want to have that tree ultimately, and just cut the bottom out, plant your red oak, and we'll talk a little bit more about red oaks in just a second, but plant your red oak in that tub, and it's going to grow, and as it gets larger, it's just going to grow its roots down, and they'll find their way. Your soil's not the best there, but at least you're not sitting on a shelf of rock, and those roots will find their way down into that soil. Ultimately, if you wanted to, you could cut the sides of the tub away and, you know, create a really attractive, rock raised bed or something like that. So that's how I would be doing it. And I think that would be a good alternative to putting it into, you know, somewhat questionable soil. I trust that the mayor did his research and got a good variety of red oak, because there are many different red oaks, and the same one that grows in your area is going to be different than the one that grows in East Texas, and it's going to be different from the one that, you know, grows in the northern part of the country. But assuming that, you know, that he did choose a variety that's suitable for Freer, you're going to have a fast-growing tree. It's going to be a beautiful tree. If you take care of it properly, you shouldn't have problems with oak wilt. And they're not as long-lived as red oak. You're probably going to get, you know, 60, 80 years of growth out of it, but that's probably enough to satisfy you. You're going to be a very old lady by that time.
Oh, Lord. Oh, I don't think I can wait that long.
Yeah, but red oak's fast growing. Red oak's beautiful with color in the fall, and produces a nice acorn crop most years. And it does demand perfect drainage. So yeah, putting it in a raised bed, or in this case, just a molasses tub with the bottom cut out of it, would be a great way to get it started.
Now that's kind of my problem, because I have caliche and badger dirt is basically what my yard is, and it's pretty much all over the area.
But if what you're doing by planting it that way is you're giving a chance for the tree to grow its roots where it wants to grow them, you're not picking the spot and saying, okay, live or die. It's almost anywhere you are. Even in very rocky soils, there tends to be good soil around the rocks. And when you plant a tree and let the roots, you know, seek their own place to grow, you should do just fine with it. I think that's going to be a great plan for you.
Okay, and so in watering, it's essential, but if it's too much, then it takes the oxygen out of the growth.
Well, the thing that I always tell people, there's no such thing as too much water, but there is too often. When you water that tree, really flood it, really soak it. You can't ever put too much water on at one time, but then let that soil dry about an inch or two deep. Just stick your finger down in the soil at the base of the tree. When that soil's dry a couple of inches deep, it's time to flood it again. You follow that rule, you'll never have a problem with watering again.
Okay, how about the peach trees? That I have one that's from the valley. It's, mm-hmm. What is it? It's Sam Houston.
Okay.
And I have two, as a matter of fact, and of course they're beginning to leaf out again. And I got another one from, it comes from Florida.
Uh-huh.
So I wonder about those two, will they hate each other?
No, they will do fine together. And you could do the same thing planting those if you like. Just create a raised bed of some sort. Had an old cousin lived up at Lake McQueenie, and Bubba didn't care what his yard looked like. He actually stacked old tires four deep and filled them with soil, and that's how he planted his peach trees. And he grew awful good peaches. I don't think the neighbors would especially appreciate worn-out tires. But if you can do... What's that?
I said he could paint them.
Oh, yeah. But all those trees, what you just want to be sure of is just you get a relatively low-chilling peach. You're going to want a peach that's somewhere in approximately the 450 chill-hour range. Just you can't grow the same peaches we grow in the hill country or really even the same ones we grow in San Antonio. But if you stay down in that 450-hour range, there are a bunch of good varieties that have been developed for the valley and for Florida. And just remember to thin those trees out during the cold season every year and just stay organic in what you do. And other than fighting the birds and the raccoons and the possums for your fruit, you should do very well with them.
Okay. Well, we got over 1,000 of these trees, and I'm trying to spread the word to people to help them be able to grow them and
Well, Dolores, do a good thing when you're talking to people about them. Don't encourage anybody to put three or four of them in their yard. Plant one or maybe two. What we need to see to have a healthy tree canopy, so to speak, we don't want to have them all the same tree. We want to have some diversity. We want to have some elms mixed in there, maybe some pecans mixed in, maybe some live oaks. But if somebody has room for five trees in their yard, don't plant five red oaks. Plant one or two red oaks and plant some different varieties just so that if the day comes when we have a specific insect or a specific disease problem that might hit the red oaks, you'll still have plenty of other good vegetation out there.
All righty then. That sounds like a plan. I'll spread the word.
You spread the word and keep up the good work.
I try to get people to listen to you, but nobody wants to get up that early in the morning.
Well, tell them to listen to me on Sunday. I'm at a much more civilized hour, and they can listen to me on the way to church between 8 and 11. I even have several preachers that have told me they moved their sermon a little bit later so they could listen for a while. So I appreciate you, and you have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you. You likewise.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Dolores. Goodbye. All right. Hang on just a minute, Greg. You'll be up next, but I need to get a break in here. And I get to talk about Green Grow Organics and Sam Sitterly. It's just nice to have somebody. I mean, I love being here for you on Saturday and Sunday mornings, but I can't come out and visit your home. There are just not enough hours in the day. If you want somebody that knows plants, that does everything organically, who can actually come to your landscape and talk to you about what to do to make it better, to solve different problems, well, that's when you need to know about Sam Sitterly and Green Grow Organics. He and his guys, they do a few things. They do some fertilizing. They do compost tea application, but it's main job is as your consultant, the guy who's done just about everything related to gardening in the 40 years he's been in business or close to it. And there's so many people that really rely on him. Some of our customers even call him Saint Sam because they say he's done so much to save their landscapes. Green Grow Organics is a good company. You can visit them online, greengroworganics.com, find out all about them, look at all the reviews, all the good pictures. Give them a call, set up a consultation. Be sure you understand any charges up front. A lot of people have them come out on a monthly basis as they're getting started. Some of them have them come out on a quarterly basis to just help with any issues that come up. Other folks just call him as needed. His business, Green Grow Organics, he is Sam Sitterly, does everything organic too. Just a good guy to help you have the most beautiful landscape in the neighborhood. Green Grow Organics.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening. Well, Greg must have dropped off. Hopefully we got his question answered. Looks like Alan and Terry are my next two callers, and Alan is up first. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Bob. How are you today?
Off to a good start. Glad to see some rain.
Fantastic on the rain, I agree. Hey, I've talked to you before about some getting rid of some Johnson grass.
Right.
And I thought of something, and more detailed question. Turns out I've got a quite the thick bluebonnet crop mixed in with the Johnson grass and other pollinators coming online. Would I be good to mow strips through the Johnson grass to try to eradicate some rows and then let the bluebonnet seeds kind of spread and do the other area next year just to maintain that seed stock?
Well, you do need to, you know, leave it undisturbed. Depending on how thick your bluebonnets are, you know, bluebonnets aren't going to get real tall. I've got bluebonnets starting to bloom that are probably about 8 or 10 inches tall. What I would think about doing where you already have your bluebonnets is just using a line trimmer on the Johnson grass and stay above the flowers. That'll wear your arms out a little bit more, holding it up higher. But as I think we've talked before, Johnson grass has to grow tall. It has to grow up and make that seed head just in order to survive. Now, areas that you haven't planted yet, this is not when you want to be planting your seed anyway. Yeah, keep that mowed down all summer long, and you'll probably have killed most of it. But where you have bluebonnets and Johnson grass together, I mean, you could go in and pull what you could by hand, but I just would. I use a, I've gotten a, where I use my little steel lithium-ion battery-powered line trimmer more than I use the big gasoline thing, and it doesn't weigh that much. I would just use that to go through your bluebonnet patch, cutting the Johnson grass off just above the level of the bluebonnets, and that way you get to enjoy your bluebonnets, you get the seed production, but you get the ugly old Johnson grass knocked down at least. That's how I'd think about doing it.
Okay, it's a couple acres worth of area. So
it's a couple of acres worth of exercise. Yeah, that's you're looking at it's kind of a big project there, and that's the thing about winter weeds really take away from your wildflowers. Winter weeds compete with your wildflowers. Your Johnson grass is more of just a nuisance, and of course it keeps you from the full enjoyment of them. So the areas where you don't have the bluebonnets, like I say, just keep it mowed down. You can kill it in a season if you don't ever let it get tall. The areas where you have your bluebonnets, it's going to be a little bit more of a challenge. But, I would hate to go through, and I guess you could mow strips through there if you wanted to, but that's really not solving the problem.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, as always. I appreciate it.
I'm jealous of you if you have 2 acres of bluebonnets to look at. You're doing better than most people. Are they up and doing pretty well this year for you?
So we're out east of San Marcos, and last fall we had the perfect rains. We had 3/4 of an inch every week or so in October and November, and the crop is very healthy.
Very good. Well, keep up the good work, and congratulations on doing it right. Appreciate the call this morning. Thank you, sir.
You too. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. All right, next in line is Terry. Good morning, Terry.
Hey, good morning, Bob. Enjoy your show, as always.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Bob, I've got a raised bed that I'm getting ready to replant. Hang on 1 second. Are you
get
there?
In a safe place. Yes, sir. I'm right here.
Okay. What I'm trying to do is get the I need to put some kind of compost or something on that raised bed.
Okay.
And just kind of getting your recommendations. I know natural chicken has got too much nitrogen in it for shrubbery. And I just wanted to get your recommendations on some kind of compost or where to get it.
Okay.
And how thick.
And what are you growing or going to be growing in this bed?
Just basically some shrubbery, some roses I want to put in, some bougainvilleas, and just a variety of stuff. I live out in the country, and I'm just kind of a mixture of stuff to get some color.
Okay. Well, and of course, your best color is going to come from annuals that you plant, pansies for the winter, periwinkles for the summer, whatever. you know, just depending on how much light you have. But what you want to do to improve the soil, basically, good organic fertilizer, poultry litter, chicken manure is fine if it's aged a bit. You just don't want to put it on fresh out of the chicken, so to speak. What I would look for is what we call a living mulch. It's going to be a more woody, fibrous material with some good finished compost mixed in. And I'd mulch those beds inch and a half deep, and they will go to work. That will go to work almost immediately, softening the soil underneath, providing some nutrition. Like I said, I'd put out a good organic fertilizer and then put your mulch on top of it, and that would be sort of be the best of all worlds. If you're going to buy it in bag, I think Nature's Creation, I think they just call it tree and shrub mulch, and that's the one I like best of the living mulches. If you're going to buy it in bulk, I'm sure somewhere like Site One, which used to be Stone and Soil Depot, probably has a pretty good mulch. Or you can just take, you know, a plain old wood mulch and add about one part compost to about four parts mulch. Make your own living mulch, and you get all the benefits of the mulch as far as weed suppression, as far as cooling the soil, along with the benefits of the compost, which is going to put all the microbes down in there, which go to work softening the soil. So a little fertilizer, good little living mulch, I think, will really turn those raised beds around.
And from gathering from what you're saying, is softening the soil is the objective of that, along with putting some nutrients into it.
Well, three things. You want to put the nutrients in. You want to encourage the microbial life in the soil, and it's those microbes that will soften the soil for you. And that's the ultimate thing, because once the soil is softer, it's going to absorb and hold moisture better, and yet it's going to stay well oxygenated. So that's the end result, is softer, more friable soil. But it's a combination of the fertilizer and the microbes that it supports that are going to soften it for you.
Okay. And as far as any decorative mulch for the top, do you recommend any of that, or how do you?
I think dyed mulches are flat ugly, but there are a lot of people like them, or they wouldn't sell so much of it. There's certainly no real benefit to a decorative mulch, but if it's pleasing to you, pleasing to your family, go for it. That's what landscaping's about, is doing things that you like. I'm just here to try to keep you from making mistakes, kind of keep it from growing well. But if you like a decorative mulch, yeah, put that on top. Or you can actually take your decorative mulch and mix one part compost to four parts mulch and turn that decorative mulch into a living mulch, and that'll do the job for you.
Oh, okay. All right, sir. Well, as always, enjoy your show every Saturday morning, and we're getting some good rain out here in Wilson County this morning, which I'm kind of jealous of that guy by San Marcos.
You know what rain was. You and me both, but I'm happy with the rains we've had. I was telling somebody the other day, I've got year-old calves that don't know what green grass looks like, and starting to see some green out in those pastures. So let's just hope it doesn't shut off. It just continues for us. But
it's kind of a good slow rain right now, too.
Yeah. We need that, and then we need a gully washer, frog strangler. Those are the two terms we were using earlier to get some water back in the aquifers and get some water in our creeks and rivers. But right now, we'll just take it any way it comes down. And you stay safe.
We both need how quick Medina Valley can, or Medina Lake can fill up. I don't know if we need that, but we've both been around long enough to see it on both ends.
Well, you know, I was talking to a friend earlier this week. I did not realize that Canyon was down so low. She can't get her boat in the water, you know, that the lake is so shallow where whatever marina she has it. That I didn't realize, but Canyon's apparently really low too. And so we all need some good rains. My lake's down. It's been lower before, but nothing that a few inches of rain wouldn't help. And you get out and have a great weekend. It's always good to hear from you, Jerry.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. Goodbye. All right, let's get our break done. A couple of open lines. Grab one if you like. 210-599-5555. I got to talk about Wild Birds Unlimited. I tell you, the birds have been beautiful this year. If you're into birding, Wild Birds Unlimited is your store because they have so many different things, and they know so much about birds. They've got the best in feeders, many of which have a lifetime guarantee. Got the new hummingbird feeders that have the built-in moat to stop the ants. They've got seed feeders. They've got suet feeders. They've got everything you're looking for to feed the birds. Good housing, too. You know, the martins just starting to arrive. If you've always wanted to have a purple martin colony, you better get a house up in the very near future and let Wild Birds Unlimited help you with that. There's so much more than a bird store, though. Lots of beautiful gift merchandise. All the Wild Birds Unlimited stores carry Wild Birds products, but they all shop independently for the other things they have. And nobody does a better job than Kyle and his staff of having beautiful things in the store. It's just where I go when I've got gifts to give, because most of my friends are outdoors-oriented people, and I just almost always find something fun at Wild Birds Unlimited. Easy to find. They're out there in the shopping center at the corner of Northwest Military and Huebner, kind of on the side that faces Northwest Military. Not a huge store, but boy, when you walk through the door, you'll say, how did they ever get so many different things into this space? Wonderful place to visit. Knowledgeable people if you have questions. Once again, Kyle and his staff are the very best at answering them. Plus, it's just nice to do business with nice people in a beautiful setting. That's Wild Birds Unlimited. If you want to give them a call, number's easy, 479-BIRD. That's 210-479-BIRD for Wild Birds Unlimited.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 1071.
All right, back to gardening. Greg tells me we've got open lines out there. So once again, usually that 7 and 8 o'clock hours get a little bit busier. Instead of waiting, why don't you pick up the phone and give me a call, 210-599-5555. One thing I did want to bring up is we in the hill country, now San Antonio's probably not going to get down to the point we might get frost, because all the low temperatures I'm seeing for the next week are, you know, no lower than the 40s here in town. But up in the hill country, going to be down in the 30s if the weathermen are ripe for a change. And just a couple of hints about keeping the frost off of things. I use the product called Insulate, and over the years, I'll tell you, I've had many a time when I was expecting a frosty night and wanted to do something to keep it from happening. If you've got little mounds of, say, squash coming up or even bush beans or things like that, what I will do is put, well, depending on the amount of space I have, either something like a cinder block or a piece of firewood stood up on end, or, you know, even just a piece of pipe or something poked down into the ground about 10 or 12 inches high, but something blunt on the top of it so it doesn't poke through. But then you could just drape your row cover over that, weight down the edges with rocks. And remember, you're not going to suffer damage to plants, at least things like tomatoes and some of your hardier plants, even squash and cucumbers and things. They're not really going to suffer from the cold if it gets down to 38 degrees, but anything below 40, we can have frost. And those frozen ice crystals on the leaf can be very, very destructive to the little plants as they're coming up. So that's what you want to prevent. And row crops, things like bush beans, which come up a few days after you plant them, or squash or cucumbers, just put something in that will support your row cover, your insulate, or whatever you use, so that you can pull it out to the edges, put a heavy rock or something like that on it, and that's going to give you the protection you need for the next two or three nights. Now, I grow a lot of things in tomato cages, not just my tomatoes, but even peppers and eggplant. And from the day I plant them, I take a little piece of that insulate, cut it about 18 inches wide, and wrap it around the cage just to cut down on the cold wind. If it looks like frost is likely, I will go back in with a little square of insulate and just put it over the top, 18 inches up, first rung that's around there. And you do all this with clothespins. It goes really, really quickly. Not a lot of trouble, but it will keep the frost off, and that is really important when you're trying to get your vegetables, and, well, for that matter, flowers, too. If you've planted anything that would be hurt by freezes, like annual salvia or marigolds, things like that you'll need to protect. Now, petunias, you don't have to worry about those guys. Snapdragons, and you might even have some Johnny Jump-Ups left. You know, frost is not a problem to them. May be a little bit damaging to the flowers, to the buds, but the plants themselves, not going to be harmed at all by a frost, so you don't have to worry about those. I hope you haven't planted periwinkles. That's the one thing we have people in the nursery every day looking for periwinkles, and it is way, way too early for periwinkles. You plant them this early, and things are they're just going to get phytophthora wilt and die. So hold off on planting those periwinkles. Greg tells me that Wade has called in, and I don't want to make him wait through the newscast. So good morning, Wade.
Hey, thanks, Bob. Good morning.
Good morning.
I've got a question. I want to plant several trees, and just wondering if I'm a little too late.
Never too late to plant trees. The nice thing, I always say the very best months to plant trees are October, November, because that gives the trees the longest period of time to get established before cold weather or before hot weather hits. Mm-hmm. In our part of the world, heat is more of a problem normally. I can't speak for the last couple of winters, but most of the time the heat is the thing we're trying to get ahead of. But you are just fine to be setting out trees right now. Are you in the San Antonio area, Wade?
This will be on a open lot in the hill country close to Luckenbach.
Oh, okay.
It's going to be pretty hot, so
okay.
I'm just worried. Yeah.
No, it's you would be fine to plant them now, and of course mulch them well. The reason I asked about San Antonio was if you were in the CPS service area, if you plant properly, they will give you a $50 per tree rebate for planting, because they know it's going to create shade, it's going to cut down on energy use, but they don't go all the way up to Luckenbach.
Right,
so
right.
I was trying to save you a little bit of money on planting them, but you'll do fine planting them up there. You will have to water regularly to get them established, but nothing at all wrong with planting this late. It's still an ideal time. Looks like we're going to move back into a period of a little bit more moderate weather, so I just do it as soon as you can.
All right. Thanks for your time. Appreciate
it. And I know you've heard me say it before, but be sure you're digging an angular hole or a square hole or whatever.
Yes,
dig a round hole. Those roots just want to go round and round. When they hit a corner, they take off in the surrounding soil. And above all, the trees are probably going to come to you already buried too deeply in the pot. So
mm-hmm.
be sure you're planting them high enough that that root flare is right up there at the surface of the ground.
For sure. All right. Thanks so much.
Always a pleasure. Good luck with your project. And thank you. It is a good time to plant, and certainly is prime time for setting out perennials. Oh, gosh, the salvias, there are about 20 different varieties of salvia that bloom off and on through the summer. Some of them bloom almost constantly. Some of them are more, you know, seasonal. But, boy, if you've never grown meadow sage, that has just gotten to be one of my favorite salvias. And traditional violet, kind of blue-purple one is the one you'll see most. But there's a new kind of rosy pink one that's also outstanding. But all the different sages, the eyelash sage, which you can grow in the shade, the salvia coccinea, the tropical sage, which you can also grow in shade if you like, usually recedes and comes back. Eyelash sage and the meadow sage, both of those are going to, the whole plant's going to come back every year. And then, of course, your evergreen salvia greggii in about six different colors. The so-called Jerusalem sage, which isn't a salvia at all, but beautiful yellow flowers in the spring and kind of interesting fuzzy leaves through the whole year. Gosh, you've also got the taller indigo spires and mystic spires. I could go on and on. I can keep you busy out in the garden all day once the rain lets up. So anyway, give me a call. We'll talk right after the news right here on KTSA Radio, San Antonio, Texas.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now, 210-599-5555.
All right, let's get back to gardening. Looks like it's going to be Thomas and Diane and Roy. Thomas is up first. Good morning, Thomas.
Good morning, Bob.
Well, good morning, sir. I know that voice. How are you today?
Well, I'm awake and doing pretty good.
As my friends say, on the right side of the grass.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about, this is real simple, I know you don't really go for, you plant beans or pole beans, but is there any variety that you do like that would work? Because that way I can you know, get up and pick them better than getting down on the ground.
Yeah, I don't have any objection to pole beans. My problem is they just haven't produced well. I think the summers have just been so hot that they just haven't done as well. I have talked to some people that said that they did very well with pinto beans as a pole bean. As far as a regular green bean, probably Kentucky Wonder is, and that can be either a bush or a pole bean, but there is a pole variety. It's pretty good. There's also a Blue Lake, which there is a pole bean form of those. And if you're going to plant pole beans, just plant more than you would with bush beans, because it'll take you about 5 pole beans to get the same amount of beans that you would get from 1 bush bean plant. But yeah, I know what you mean about bending over. It's hard on your back to pick too much. That's one reason that some folks, as we get a little age, go to more raised beds, because you don't have to bend down as far to pick them. But no, if you want to try your pole beans, just you know, like I say, plant a whole lot more individual plants, because even if we have a year where they really produce well, the production of the actual number of beans is going to be about a fifth what it would be on a good bush bean like Contender or Tavera or some of those.
Well, another thing, see, I get my wife to pick them and she don't like it.
Well, I'm not going to go down that road. We both wind up in trouble.
Well, another thing I wanted to ask you, I use a lot of leachate, you know, compost leachate.
Right.
And this compost I get is from out there on I-10. Anyway, it's always been good, but, you know, that stuff never, I use about four, I have a 5-gallon bucket. I use about 4 good handfuls in a, I use a paint strainer bag. But that stuff never smells. It never stinks. It goes for 3, 4, 5 days.
Yeah. Well, and that's what happens. And of course, in the cooler weather, the stinky stuff is many times where people put too much in it. It goes anaerobic, and that's what makes the bad smell. As long as your compost leachate is good and aerobic, it's going to have more of a fresh, you know, kind of a, I'll say just that fresh, like you were out in a pasture or something like that. Yeah. But compost leachate, if it's, you know, if it's done properly with the right compost, it shouldn't smell. Don't try to store it for a month, but for several days you should do just fine with it, as you've obviously discovered. And don't put 10 cups of it in a 5-gallon bucket. 4 or 5 cups are probably all you need.
Right. I just use a handful. I have a little bit more time on my hands nowadays as far as, you know, my activity. So I watch a lot of YouTube, Bob.
Which is both good and bad, because there's some good stuff on there, and there's some of it that just doesn't work for our area. But you're smart enough to figure out which is which, so more power to you.
Well, I want to tell you about this guy. He's a senator from Louisiana. Now, I won't get into politics, but his name is John Kennedy.
Yeah, and he is a very, I guess you'd say, outspoken, and I can't repeat some of the things that he says in public on the radio, but he tells it like it is, and even if I don't always agree with him, and I usually agree with Senator Kennedy, but I respect anybody that has the courage to stand up and point out things that are being done wrong. So I didn't know he was a gardener.
He can tell you to go to the devil and make you like it.
Yep. Yep, that's the definition of a diplomat. But no, he's a man that speaks his mind and in a conservative fashion, which is the way that I generally view things. I would have to say on many human rights issues, I'm very liberal. But boy, when it comes to financial policy, I'm very conservative. And we're going down the wrong road there, but we won't get into that. I'll leave that for Jack and Trey to talk about.
Well, I get a good laugh out of the guy. I mean,
he's hilarious.
And he made a statement. I won't mention the name. He said, "You know what? This guy was in charge of the Sahara Desert. He'd run out of sand."
Well, Thomas, you get out and you continue to enjoy things, and I do appreciate your call this morning. And let's talk to Diane. Good morning, Diane.
Hey, Bob, how are you doing on this rainy day?
Watching or hearing the rain come down in the night and seeing almost a quarter of an inch in the gauge. That's a great way to start your day off.
Not bad.
Not bad at all.
Last week we talked about my the space that's been created by my two loquats getting too big, and you had mentioned maybe, you know, if one volunteered to plant it in front. And then I thought, well, can you do a layer with a loquat?
Sure.
Not an air layer, but if I got a branch low enough to the ground where I can just make a new tree off of that, because I don't think I'm going to have volunteers because I haven't had fruit.
Haven't had fruit?
Years.
Yeah.
Well,
you should
it
be.
Makes fruit, but not when it freezes as the boat blooms are on.
Well, and that's, you know, that's the problem with loquat. It blooms in the fall, and then they have to make it through a whole winter before they, you know, mature and produce seed, and we haven't had that in 3 years. But, yes, you can do a layer with a loquat. Just, you know, slice the bark off the bottom portion of the stem and do two or three. And a two out of three root should be that much further ahead. But, yeah, there's no reason you can't do a layer on a loquat.
Awesome. Okay, that's all I got today, Bob. Thank you so much.
You stay safe and warm out there, and we'll talk again, Diane. I appreciate the call. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. All right, next in line is Roy. Good morning, Roy.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
How are you?
Off to a good start.
Yeah, enjoying the rain. It really sounds nice.
I'm not necessarily enjoying wearing four layers of clothes this morning, but I'm not ready for 100-degree weather either. I kind of hope that it's winter's last gasp here, but that the rain will continue.
Well, I'll sacrifice a little bit of cold for the wet, let me tell you.
Amen. Amen to that.
A couple of questions, Bob. Looking for a tree in the yard, and I don't need anything real big, so I've sort of looked at a chinkapin oak or a lady mm-hmm. oak. Which
okay.
of those two do you think would be better?
Both of them are good trees. The Lacey's oak is a little bit more demanding of fairly deep soil, but where you are, you have fairly deep soil. I wouldn't rule out the Monterey oak either, the so-called Mexican live oak. It is a fairly compact tree, and but those are all three good trees. When you go back to the Lacey's oak, that's one that grows around my ranch. And it only grows down in the valleys where I've got a little bit deeper alluvial soil. You can see where the trees kind of go a few feet up the hill, but when you get up to where the soil thins out, you don't find any more Lacey's oak up there. So it's...
I'm in heavy black soil and,
yeah.
You know, with some flip rocks and stuff, so I've got, you know, pretty good soil for that.
Yeah. No, I would say Lacey's oak, chinkapin oak. Look at the Monterey oak, though, because it is a little faster growing, and it's semi-evergreen. And in a milder winter, it'll keep its leaves all winter. So I'm not sure, you know, what suits you best. The chinkapin will have a little more fall color than the Lacey's oaks do. But those are all three good trees, Roy. If you got room, plant three different trees. If you're going to plant more than one tree, do plant more than one kind of tree, because this is where we run into real problems, where we get what we call a monoculture.
Right.
It's a bunch of trees, but all the same variety. And then you have problems, well, like they had with the Dutch elm disease, like the emerald ash borer, and us with the oak wilt problems. If you put all your trees in one basket, so to speak, and you get something that goes after those trees, you're not nearly as well off as you are if you have a more diversified canopy. So you already know that, but I repeat it for the benefit of anybody listening out there that might be thinking about doing that.
Okay. Another question then, Bob. I had to redo my septic system, the lateral line was set last year.
Uh-huh.
So I've got area outside the yard in the pipes, in there are basically 15, 16 foot apart.
Uh-huh.
If I would want to plant seed trees in between there, would I have to worry about those reaching, the roots reaching the ladder line gravel in the pipe?
Eventually they're going to. Yeah, eventually they're going to, Roy, but I, you know, my septic system is probably close to 100 years old. I've got oak trees that are 24 inches in diameter, you know, all up and down. It was an old rock fence, and it's not interfered with the functioning of the lateral, so I wouldn't worry about it too much. But fig trees, of course, they do form a pretty dense root system, but they also pull a lot of moisture, you know, up, and that's what you want your lateral lines to spread that, you know, spread that out through the soil. So it's going to be a lot of years before that's going to create any problem for you, and I wouldn't hesitate to plant them.
Okay, and then what about some varieties for those?
There are two basic types of figs. One group of figs produces a little drop of rosin down there on what we would call the blossom end, and it keeps the fruit weevils. Now, I've never had a problem with my fig trees, but I know some people have a problem with those little weevils that want to get into the fig and sour the fruit. And if you get the closed-end varieties, and they're not really closed, they just have a little drop of rosin that seals off that end, you'll never have to worry about that. And the two best closed-end figs out there, one of them is called Alma, A-L-M-A, Spanish for soul, or the other is Celeste, sometimes sold as Celestial. But those are closed-end varieties that do very well. Others, things like your old brown turkey or Texas Everbearing, very, very productive fig. Even where you are south of town, I worry about some of the varieties coming out from further south. There are a couple of good figs in Louisiana. One of them is called LSU Purple. And then there's another purple giant, but they're just not as cold hardy. And in a winter like we had in 2021, or actually pretty much what we had last December, even though you're south of town, you would have suffered some freeze damage on those. So Alma, Celeste, Texas Everbearing, those are all things. And then there's some slightly more unusual. There's one called Ishii, I-S-H-I. There's one called Green Gage. These are little smaller figs with a slightly different color. And if you ever want to grow a cute, compact fig, which still produces fruit, in fact, you grow this one in a pot if you wanted to, but it's called Little Miss Figgy, and it's a great little dwarf fig. Now, you're on acreage. You've got enough room to grow the bigger figs, but anybody listening out there that doesn't have much room and still wants a fig tree, the Little Miss Figgy is really fills a need. It's a funny, creative name, and it's a good little fig, too.
Okay, sounds good. Another question, Bob. My wife found a compost spreader on the internet, and basically what it is a kind of a big drum that's got like expanded metal, more or less,
That's exactly what it is.
Compost and roll it, and it says it spreads evenly and everything. Have you do you have any experience with them? Are they really worth it to do the spreading with?
Well, it kind of depends on your compost. Most of the commercial compost, you're going to find a lot of twiggy material in there, which isn't a problem when you're spreading it by hand. But I tell you, it'll clog up. It'll frustrate the heck out of you. Those things are a great idea. And if you had a way to sift, you know, they use what they call a Trammel screen when they're producing compost. They can get it down to where they've taken all of the, you know, chunkier material out of it, but very few people do that. And I think you're buying some frustration there when you buy one of those. I love what one of my callers suggested recently, who has a fairly powerful leaf blower, and said he just goes out, you know, with his wheelbarrow and dumps piles of compost here, there, and all around, and then just gets his leaf blower and gets out there. And when it's dry, he says that does an easy job of spreading without having to bend over or do anything else. So I haven't tried it yet myself, but I just haven't had the time. But I would opt for something like that before I get one of those little tumblers. Again, if you had, and there are some composts, that black cow compost out there is, it has very little twiggy material in it, but most of your good living compost, they've simply got too much chunky twiggy material in there to work with that spreader.
Oh, sounds good. And then I need to build some raised beds for my wife for flower beds. Mm-hmm. And I know there's, is it Trex or something like that? That's a wood, that a treated wood, if you will, that will last real well.
There, it's called Trex, T-R-E-X, and it's not treated wood. It's kind of a fake wood. It's a plastic material with wood fiber in it, so it looks kind of like wood, but that stuff will last forever. It's a little flexible. You have to put your supports a little closer together, but it's great material to build a raised bed out of because it'll still be there 40 years from now. The other thing, if you wanted something that is wood, the EcoVantage, and if you're going to buy very much of it, give me a call and I'll tell you about the source. They don't have a retail yard, but that EcoVantage wood is what we've built several structures with here at the nursery. I absolutely love it. They've had it in ground contact in East Texas for 30 years with no rotting, pilings in swamps for 30 years with no rotting. It's just outstanding. It's about the same price as Trex, but once again, it's just the availability of that stuff that's a little bit more of a problem, but those are two of the best materials. You know, beyond that, you can use cinder blocks, you can use rock. There are lots of different things you can use out there, but Trex is not quite as attractive as real wood, but it's a last forever material.
Yeah. Okay, and the EcoVantage, is that available in San Antonio somewhere?
It is, but like I say, they don't really have a retail outlet, but if you called my friends over there and said, hey, I need 30 or 40 boards or something like that, they'll sure do business with you. Call me at the nursery here sometime, and I'll dig out my contact information for them.
Will do. Okay. Thank you so much, Bob. Always a pleasure talking to you, and let it keep raining.
I'll sure go for that, Roy. It's good to hear your voice. Thank you so much. Goodbye. Got to do a break here. Ray will be up right after that. Looks like I get to talk to you about Southwest Metal Roofing Systems. Talk about something that lasts forever. That's another one of those places where there are a lot of metal roofs out there, but there's a big difference in quality. There's a big difference in quality of installation, and there's a big difference in the warranties that come along with them. And the people who put them in may or may not stand behind them. I guess that was a good thing because years ago when we did not know about Southwest Metal Roofing Systems, we had another well-known company put a metal roof on our building and it rusted out promptly over a very few years, and they kind of forgot that they'd given us a warranty. We want Southwest Metal Roofing Systems to replace it. It really cost no more than the original roof and have never had a problem with it. And I know Southwest Metal Roofing Systems does honor their warranties because there's so little they have to do. I've had one of the roofs on my home for, I guess, 20 years now. Never called them even once with a problem. They simply use the best material out there, have the best workmanship in the industry, in my opinion, and they're just good people to deal with, and their prices are very, very reasonable. On top of that, you're going to save money every month on your utility bill because their roofs are so energy efficient, and you have so many choices when it comes to appearance. You get many different colors. You can actually get different styles of metal, but it's all the same great quality and just people you can depend on to do the job right first time, every time. They also do new construction. If you're building a new home, tell your builder you want Southwest Metal Roofing Systems to put the roof on, and it'll be the last roof you ever have to worry about on that home. Give them a call to learn more, 210-822-6868. That's 210-822-6868 for Southwest Metal Roofing Systems.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, I warned you it was going to happen. Lines are all full, so wait a minute before you dial or you just get a busy signal. We're going to talk to Ray and Robin and Marcia and Joe. Let's get started with Ray. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, sir.
Reason for my call is in my yard, I have what looks like carpet grass, but it doesn't seed out like what I'm used to seeing. Is that a different type of carpet grass? Or
there is a grass that is, they call it centipede grass, but again, that's a problem with common names. The true St. Augustine, it doesn't, I mean, it makes a seed head, but there's no way to separate the seed out from it. But if the if it's a little more aggressive and the leaves are a little bit more narrow, that's probably, again, I'm using a common name, it's probably the so-called centipede grass. You're challenging my memory. I think Stenotaphrum is the botanical name of St. Augustine, if I remember right. But, the bottom line is, does it make a good lawn grass? And if you like the appearance, if it grows with the amount of sun you have, there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, I mean, I like the grass. It's just, I like it to seed. There'll be some time, like, you know, usually every 2 or 3 years. I just let it grow, let the seed germinate and do a stain and try to keep it from getting thin. But
hey, if it works for you,
it doesn't seed. It just doesn't put off seed.
Well, that is probably more of a true St. Augustine type grass, because St. Augustine, which is what most people call carpet grass, doesn't make seed. But the so-called centipede grass, which is probably what you had before, does make seed and does spread that way.
Oh, okay.
And if you ever see carpet grass seed advertised, that's what you're getting. Now, it's not a bad grass. It's not as soft to walk on. It's not, many people think that it's not quite as attractive. But, hey, the bottom line is whether or not you like it. That's all that really matters. And it does take a little bit more sun. That's the other thing about true St. Augustine, is it will grow in shadier areas. But if you like that, just look for centipede grass or what they call carpet grass seed, and that'll be what you're getting.
Okay, thank you.
You're certainly welcome, Ray. Thanks for the call and the good question. Next in line is Robin. Good morning, Robin.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
I have a question about lettuce.
Okay.
I planted, it's called Crisp Pad, the Queen lettuce, and it has already turned bitter. And I was really surprised about that. If I cut it back all the way, do I have a chance of it's coming back sweet, or do I just have to pull it up and put it in the compost?
I would increase your watering and hope that it stays cool, and you may get some good lettuce out of it. But that's a problem with head lettuces. They just don't do well in this area. So if you want to grow good lettuce, it's almost going to have to be a leaf lettuce. And leaf lettuces do extremely well, but the head lettuces, like you are talking about, they tend to get bitter earlier in the season. They tend to not make that crisp, tight head that you're looking for. So the biggest problem here is not anything you've done or haven't done, except that it's just not a good variety to try to grow. We're just in the wrong climate for growing head lettuces. But, boy, you can get 15 different leaf lettuces that will do well and produce very long into the spring. Your head lettuces are going to turn bad on you as soon as we get the first hot weather.
Okay. And, you know, I thought this was a leaf lettuce. Because
if it's called Crisp Head, if it has the name head in the name of it, you know it's designed to be a head lettuce.
Yeah, that's right. You're right. Okay, so I can cut it back and water it more and see if something happens.
I wouldn't cut it back. I would just water it more and see if you get rid of some of the bitterness. Now, you probably would be setting out plants rather than seed this late, but I think you'll find that many nurseries still have some red sails and some of the other leaf lettuce plants. And if you like growing arugula and things like that, you could still, again, I think it's a little late to be planting from seed, but the next week or two looks like temperature is going to be ideal for lettuce. So if you just want to have some fresh homegrown lettuce, head down to a good nursery and you can probably set out some plants and pick for at least another 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure, Robin. Thank you for the call. Let me check my time right here. And Yeah, we can keep on going. Well, I tell you what, on second thought, let me get a quick break in here so we don't get behind. And, Marcia, you'll be up next. Hang on just a second while I talk about Nature's Creation and their fine products. They make some of the best bag products out there when it comes to compost and mulch, potting soil, garden soil, cactus and succulent soil. Nature's Creation makes a lot of fine things, and they're all built around the Nature's Creation compost. It's simply some of the finest compost you're going to find. It is finished compost. They add so many things to it. They add, I think it's 21 different strains of mycorrhizal. No, it's actually 11 different strains of mycorrhizal fungi to it. And there are no biosolids, no manure, so it's always going to have that pleasant, earthy smell to it. It's easy to spread if you're putting it over a grassy area. I use it in my garden. Well, when I'm getting ready to plant tomatoes, I'll put a handful of fertilizer down and then a little pile of Nature's Creation compost over the top. Where I'm planting something in a row like okra, I'll, you know, put my fertilizer down in a line, and then I'll just put that nice little band of Nature's Creation on top of it. And you would be amazed. And just you water a few times, that soil underneath gets so soft. You'll have so many earthworms move into the area. It's just truly the best that I've ever found in bag compost. I mean, we have people that at our nursery that come in and buy 30 bags at a time sometimes. It's just a top quality product like everything from Nature's Creation. Going to find it a lot of different places. You're going to find it at both locations of the plant house, both New Braunfels and Kerrville. Friendly Natives up in Fredericksburg carries it. Both Rainbow locations here in San Antonio carry it. Millburgers carries it. Hill Country African Violets up in Burney. Lots of people have it, and of course we keep it here at Shades of Green. Quality products, in this case compost, from Nature's Creation.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 1071.
All right, back to gardening. We're going to talk to Marcia and then Joe. Got some open lines again. If you want to grab one, you know the number, 210-599-5555. Marcia's next in line. Good morning, Marcia.
Good morning, Bob. Happy rain day.
Oh, well, one day late, happy St. Patty's Day, and now a happy rain day. Kind of a great combination.
Yes. My question, Bob, is about azomite. You and Howard have talked a lot about azomite and that it's a good thing, but I need a little more in the way of direction about using it. I plant in in the big black molasses buckets.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And give me some information.
Okay. Well, it is what we would call a rock mineral. It's an ore, as many different micronutrient products are. Azomite just contains a wider variety of micronutrients. And these are things that it only takes a very tiny amount, but the plants still have to have them. Things like boron and selenium and copper and a lot of those things that would be toxic if you had too much of them. But it just brings... oh, they're probably close to 100 different beneficial elements and compounds in the azomite, which you can get a real powdered form, or you can get it that's a little more granule. They used to make a molasses-coated form, but I think that just got to be too much work. But I don't believe that it's quite as long-lasting as, say, green sand, or, of course, things that bring more of a physical structure like lava sand, but... It's not a fertilizer. You might think of it as the vitamin, so you can use it along with your regular fertilizers. I tend to work a little bit of it in at the beginning of every planting season. That may be more often than I have to, but if I were growing in molasses tubs, I perhaps would use half a cup of it. And first year, you know, if you want to blend it with the soil, you can. What I do is kind of like I do with Epsom salts for the tomatoes and things like that. I'll just sprinkle the azomite on the surface and figure that as I'm planting, a little bit of it will get mixed into the soil. But it's a rock material, so it doesn't really dissolve. The nutrient material is released through microbial activity, so it's not something that's going to leach away or wash away. But golly, what else can I tell you about it? There are just so many different things. First time I ever was introduced to it was at a nursery trade show, and the gentleman had a piece of poster board up on edge, which was about 3 feet tall, and it was fairly small printing from top to bottom of just all the different beneficial things it contains.
Great, great, great. But I continue to use the rock phosphate in my whole...
Yes, I've found nothing that substitutes for the rock phosphate. A difference is that with the azomite, those things can be blended with the soil and still be available to the plants. With rock phosphate, if it gets mixed up with the soil, the plants can't get to it. It's locked up chemically, and that's why we put our rock phosphate in as a solid layer that the plant can grow its roots directly through. So, and tomatoes are about the only thing we do that with, although it seems to help some with peppers, but to me it's just mandatory on tomatoes. But I would use that in addition to and completely independent of using something like azomite.
Great.
And you might not need azomite. I mean, if your soil's good enough and you're growing really good plants, maybe you don't really need it. Maybe you've got everything you need. But if you want to experiment with it and just see if it gives you bigger, stronger plants, more production, by all means do so. In my highly alkaline soil, my highly alkaline water, the yellowing can always be a problem and sometimes burn tips and all, and the azomite seems to really stop that. So does that give you the information you need?
It does. And my second question, and this is my last question, is talk to me about seeding figs. How often and what are good things to feed my figs?
Figs are among the least picky plants in the entire world. They'll eat anything, you might say. But main thing with figs is keep them mulched, keep them watered. But beyond that, the same stuff you put on the garden, same stuff you put on the grass, whether it's Medina's Growing Green or Maestro Rose Texas Tea or Nature's Creations Premium Lawn Food, those are all great fig feeders. If you're growing something like that Little Miss Figgy that I was talking about in a pot, I probably would use a good liquid like Castor Grow Plant or something like that. But any of your good organic products are going to make your figs really happy and very productive. The problem with the figs, of course, is we've had two super cold winters and they froze back. But in both cases, they've come back out. Mine, after the 2021 freeze, they still gave me a pretty good crop of figs the next year. After this December's freeze, my figs really haven't started regrowing much, but they're just the most dependable fruit tree that you could possibly have out there. Not everybody likes figs. I happen to like figs, and I like Fig Newton, so take it from there. If you like figs, you give them almost anything, and they'll be happy as long as you give them plenty of water.
Great. Bob, I sure appreciate you increasing my knowledge base. You have a great day.
You do the same. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. Thank you. Goodbye. All right, let's get the last break of the hour in, and then we'll have time for a few more phone calls before our visit with the Dirt Doctor. Speaking of Medina, I get to talk to you about Medina, and I thought I'd tell you about a new Medina product that's out there, and they have a new variety of Growing Green. They call it Growing Green 961, and it's a totally new fertilizer for Medina. It's organic. Don't worry about that. I wouldn't be talking about it if it weren't organic, but it's derived from some different things, and I know one thing that will really appeal to you, it doesn't have any odor to it at all. It's derived from like feather meal and meat byproducts and things like that. There are no manures at all in it, and I love the regular Growing Green, and in some ways I think the regular Growing Green's better because they're able to put more micronutrients and things into it since they actually produce it over in Hondo. But this new one, it's a higher nitrogen fertilizer. It's a little more expensive because of that, but when you figure it out, it costs, if you apply it as directed, it costs almost exactly the same as the other Growing Green products do. And like everything from Medina, it's designed to work with the soils, work with the microbes in the soil, and it's just going to be a great new addition. Being higher nitrogen, you use less of it, and it probably produces a little bit faster green up, which may be important in a year when we have had some cold damage to things. So it's just one addition to that fine arsenal, shall we say, of garden products from Medina. It's It's a great product. It's called Growing Green 961. Combine that with the regular Growing Green, the liquid Hestagrow products, the liquid fish blend. You've got everything you need to keep your plants healthy and happy and properly fed. Products from our friends at Medina Agriculture.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening. Time for a few more phone calls before we do our visit with the dirt doctor, and then we usually try to save a little time afterwards. And, of course, we do this again tomorrow morning from 8 till 11 if you don't get your question in today. So right now we're going to talk to Joe and then Steve. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, sir. Everything is, looks good out there. I just, I don't know. I'd love a hard rain this morning and sunshine this afternoon, but wishes are pretty fleeting in this crazy Texas weather.
Yes, sir. I have a question about grub worm damage. I have St. Augustine grass up in the front, and I had a friend that came in from Rainbow Gardens, and he told me, he says, no, he says, you have grub worm damage. And so with that in mind, I know that I need to buy nematodes, but I think someone in your store told me wait till the cold weather ceases. So is it time to buy that blue sponge? I have a series of quick questions.
Well, that's just fine. Let's talk about, you know, the life cycle of the grub worm, and then we'll talk about whether it's time or not. The big grubs that you see, if you had grub worm damage and you were to go digging around in the soil, you'd probably find some fairly good-sized grub worms, but those are not the ones that do the damage. The ones that eat the roots of your grass are what we call the first and second larval instars, and they're little tiny things, you know, smaller than an English pea. Considerably smaller, just bigger than a grain of rice, but they're very little at the stage that they do all the damage. They are the larval state of a June bug. Those ones that did the damage last year, they're now up to those things that are, you know, up to a much bigger size. When the weather warms up, they will pupate to form June bugs, and then they will fly around and start laying eggs again. So I think it's earlier than you need to put the nematodes out, because the nematodes live in the soil for about 60 days. So you can put them out if you wanted to, but I'm going to wait until it's time that we start seeing the June bugs flying, which is probably going to be somewhere between 2 weeks and 6 weeks from now. It just kind of depends on how long the weather stays cool. So you are very wise to put them out and probably put them out twice, but I'd say you're at least 2 weeks too early and maybe a month earlier than you really need to, since the weather's turned off pretty cool again. So does that give you a little more guidance?
Yes, sir. And I do understand you need to water the soil first before you apply them.
That's correct, because they don't walk, they swim. So they need soil moisture to move around and find the grub worms to eliminate them.
Okay. And I have an ortho. I'm coming off surgery, so I can't be picking up a bucket with these little creatures.
I understand.
So yep. I have an ortho sprayer, one of those little dial sprayers.
Mm-hmm.
I think I heard you many years ago say remove the little filter from the end of the tip.
You heard exactly. You're a good listener. That little tube that goes down into the jar, now not the strainer that's where you hook the hose on, that stays there, but the little tube that goes down in the jar normally has a little filter, a little strainer on the end of it. Pop that off so that your nematodes will go up through that little stem. I would set it for, you know, at least 4 ounces. The opening, it's not really important. It's just you want to have it wide enough open that the nematodes can go up and through. So I'd set it at a minimum of 4 ounces per gallon, and then just get out and spray. No heavy lifting. Should not interfere with your recovery.
Okay, and so I guess you did answer the first question. It is a little cold, and so you're going to wait roughly about another month, which is good. I get time to heal and get this done, and I think that's it. Should I continue watering after I apply the nematodes?
Just as much as you need to keep your grass alive and happy, which is probably going to be about once a week. So if there's enough moisture in the soil to keep your plants happy, there's enough to keep your nematodes happy.
Okay. Thank you for the help. Appreciate that.
It's always a pleasure, Joe. Hope you make a quick and complete recovery.
Thank you.
Thank you. Goodbye. All right, Steve, good morning. How can we help you? Oh, Steve dropped off. Okay, well, just, 4 minutes here until news time. I think I can keep things going for 4 minutes with just things that you really need to do. You really need to get your fertilizer out. And one of the benefits of organic fertilizers is that you can put them on wet grass. Now, don't even be thinking, well, I wouldn't be using the chemical fertilizer, synthetic fertilizers, I should say. But if you put those things on wet grass, it'll burn the heck out of the grass. But with organic products like things from Nature's Creation and Medina, Maestro Grow, you can certainly put those things out with no problem on a day like this. And your plants will really appreciate it because they really need the nutrients, because that has to be digested a bit by microbes in the soil before it's available to your grass and shrubs and trees. So really, really important to get that nutrient out there. Also, if you're working on softening your soil, you're using something like Medina Plus, you want to be doing that about once a month now. And today would be a good day. The soil's already moist, so things are going to go down. Now, if you're fighting some of the other insect problems out there, like the thrips insect, or you're still worried about ticks, which may still be down at ground level, is certainly a great time to put the beneficial nematodes out for those. Great time to put the beneficial nematodes out for fire ants, because they do a great job of controlling them as well. Also, termites will be killed by beneficial nematodes. It's just a little early, I think, for grub worms, but they're going to live about 60 days in the soil. So if you're dealing with these other issues, it would certainly be okay to put them out now. If you are concerned about the different caterpillars that eat the foliage of the trees, there's so many different little ones that go after the new growth just as it starts to come out on the trees. Well, we put out this little non-stinging wasp called a Trichogramma wasps. And they come on a little card. It looks like a piece of paper. What is actually on that paper are little moth eggs that have the developing wasp larval inside. You hang these little strips out on the trees. Little wasps hatch out, and they destroy the eggs of the caterpillars before they can even hatch out and start feeding on the new growth. Don't wait until you start seeing damage, especially on the oak trees that are just starting to leaf out now. If you wait until you already see the caterpillars, well, the wasps aren't going to go after them. They're going to go after the eggs of the damaging caterpillars. So Trichogramma wasp should go out now or in the very near future for the leafing caterpillars. Now, it's a little early to deal with the webworms, things like that. You'll put a second application of Trichogramma out long about, probably April. That'll help with the second generation of pecan nut case bearers, and also with webworms that tend to get in the trees out there as well. So those are two beneficial predatory insects you can put out. Ladybugs are back. Last year we didn't have a source of ladybugs because California restricted the distribution of them, as they should have, because of some things been pretty devastating to their habitat over there. But this year you will once again find ladybugs in the nursery. We've got a visit with the Dirt Doctor coming up, followed by more phone calls here on KTSA Radio.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now. 210-599-5555.
All right, back to gardening. And as you know, this is not the time to dial. We'll take a few more phone calls the last half hour of the show. But and now is the time we get to visit with the Dirt Doctor. Good morning, Howard.
Well, good morning. How's everybody in Texas?
I think most people in Texas, at least in South Texas, are pretty happy because it's been a rainy morning down here. I understand that you're a little bit further west of us this morning.
Yeah, Bo and Logan bought a new place in Tucson, Arizona, and I came out to help them do some new art. I've been working on about four new pieces for them, and we've been traveling around. We got to go to the Live Golf Tournament. It's one of the reasons they wanted me to come to town. I'd never seen one of those golf courses, so one of those tournaments. So it was interesting to see how it works. I'm a big PGA fan, but I'm open to seeing what other people are doing as well. But the weather here is great. I understand we got heavy rain in Dallas, too. Did y'all catch that same rain?
we've gotten lighter rain, but boy, we're happy for any rain. We right now the lakes are still low, the aquifers desperately need some water, but we're getting regular enough rains that the grasses are starting to green up, and things are improving. We've got a ways to go, but we're definitely on the right trend. I just hope it doesn't get hot and dry off. We're actually looking in the hill country, and I guess Dallas probably is. I haven't looked at your forecast up there, but we're looking at lows, temperatures in the 30s the next two or three nights. So Easter's late. You know, everybody always talks about that typical late cold snap, and I hope this is it. I hope the rain continues, but I hope this is the end of the really cold. But anyway, it's just a nice morning out there. I'm wearing more layers than I usually do, but it's going to be a pretty stretch of weather coming up. I saw something this week that I have never seen before that I thought I would ask you, and I think Roberta got a couple of pictures. I didn't, it was very uneven terrain, and I didn't get my phone out to take it, but you've seen cut ants at work, I'm sure, you know, taking leaves down out of the trees and things.
Yeah, sure.
But we were on kind of a remote portion of the ranch just checking for fence damage from the ice storm, and there the cut ants were at work on some cedar elms that were just coming out, but they had they weren't just carrying individual leaves and headed back to the mound. It was like they had paved the ground. There was a ribbon 4 inches, maybe 5 inches wide, that was like a green highway. It was a total carpet of green leaves, and the ants were walking along on top of that, carrying individual leaves back to the mound. And this stretched, there were actually three different areas. One of them was a couple of inches wide, and two of them were, like I say, much wider. But it was just a carpet of leaves that they had laid down, and they were walking across those to take the leaves back into the mound itself. Now, I don't know whether they were going to come back and pick them up later, but it was so odd just walking along on what normally fairly shady, so it would have been bare dirt and rock, but it was just a mattress of leaves along the ground, and I'd never seen that before.
That's fascinating. I've never seen that either. I was going to ask you what kind of soil it was, but just on sandy soil, you would think they would walk on that all right. But I guess they decided that if they paved it, it would be a nicer surface walk.
Well, in fact, if she didn't get a good picture, I'll make a point. It's rough terrain. It's not an area we usually walk, but when you're moving the cows around, you want to be sure the fence is in good shape. But I truly had never seen it, and it's a darker soil. It's not really sandy, but interspersed with giant boulders and things like that. But I think I'm kind of like you. After so many years, just don't ever think you've seen it all, because something will jump up and really surprise you.
Well, that's different. I have never seen anything like that at all.
Well, I'll see that we get a photograph or two to you. It was just really interesting.
Yeah. We're going to be meeting on that book I've been writing forever this week, so hopefully we're going to get it going. Maybe we ought to put a photograph of that in the book. One of the sections of the book is going to be diseases and insect situations in thumbnails with an explanation out beside the photograph and a recommendation on what to do. So having some unusual things in there like that would probably be a good idea.
Well, this is unique. I'm not sure that it's real definitive, because, God, I've seen plenty of cut ants in my life, but it was just, it will make a very interesting picture. Like I say, I'll check with her, and if she didn't get a good picture of it, she's the photographer of the group, so to speak. And, you guys know what you're doing. I get pictures taken, but then, she always makes me look bad, because hers are so much better. So, I'll see what we got, and I'll get something off to you. But, I just thought that was very interesting. Another thing I want to ask you about is I had a customer in this week saying that she had a bad case of boxwood blight, And I've never heard of boxwood blight. I occasionally, even though my boxwoods are probably 100 years old and I've never seen a problem with them, I see where people occasionally lose a plant to, I think, mainly being buried too deep over the years. But are you familiar with a disease called boxwood blight? Do you all see it up in the Dallas area?
No, I've seen some die spotted here and there before, and it's just the fact that that's a short-lived tree. You know, it's not a real healthy tree, and if it's in a situation where it's getting too much or too little water or something, you know, is really a big environmental stress, I think you could get a disease go downhill. But I've never seen any widespread situation where trees were being infected and it was spreading through the trees or anything like that at all.
Well, that's what I said, and she was just adamant. Well, I've been reading about it on the internet, and I said, well, you're not reading dirtdoctor.com, so you're not getting good information. But it was, go ahead.
I was wondering who did the diagnosis, and if it was the internet, I think we just discovered the problem. You're right.
Yep, other than dirtdoctor.com, I tell people it might be useful for identifying things, but as far as, you know, getting any actual advice or any accurate diagnosis, chances are pretty minimal. It serves its purpose, but gosh, it's just discouraging. So many people make so many mistakes based on what they've seen or bought off the internet, and we're happy to tell them what's wrong with what they're reading, but sometimes they've already gone and done other things that we wouldn't approve of. But that's the nature of the of the situation. It's golly, there. Oh, so many interesting things out there. One other thing that I was going to ask if you had heard about, and I knew it was coming, but I think it's actually in the marketplace now. I didn't know if you were aware that Medina had come out with a new fully organic fertilizer. It's not USDA certified, but it is OMRI listed, but they've come out with a new fertilizer, a little bit higher nitrogen, that I think is going to, it's a lower odor than, you know, some of the other things they make. But if you haven't seen it, it's going to be on the market in the Dallas area pretty soon. And it doesn't have quite the same micronutrient package, but it doesn't have the smell either. So I think it's going to be popular with some people.
No, I haven't heard about it or seen it yet, so I'm surprised they haven't send it to us. I'm sure we'll be getting it right away. What's the basic ingredient in the product to give the higher nitrogen?
It's a meat byproduct, believe it or not, and it's some meals. I think it's kind of like what Gary DeMasters did with Maestro Grow originally, with some different meal products, maybe feather meal and leather meal in it. But it is, like I say, it is OMRI certified, so I think it's going to fit into what you and I do. But it's a 9-6-1 formulation, which of course is much higher. It's unfortunately it's a little higher priced, and I don't think it replaces their other product, because, you know, they've got their own pelletizing plants, so some of the things they make, they can put whatever they want into it. This product apparently comes to them already pelletized, so they're not able to include all the things that they have in the original Growing Green. But we get a lot of complaints about odor, not only on theirs, but on some other poultry litter products. And this one has virtually no odor whatsoever. So I think it'll have its place out there in our arsenal of organic supplies.
Well, sounds good. I look forward to seeing it. I've never had much complaint about the odor. You know, another thing people can do if they're concerned about the odor is to go to the corn gluten meal route. It makes a good general fertilizer, not just a pre-emergent situation.
And that's what I tell people. You know, it may or may not work as a pre-emergent depending on the weather, but you're always getting a good feeding benefit out of it. So so it's a good thing to have out there. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've learned a couple of things about plants in a different part of the world. One of them is how careful you need to be and stay away from choa that throws its needles, the I'm saying the wrong word. The cactus that throws its needles, supposedly. I don't remember hitting one at all, and I got some in my clothes while I was walking around.
Yeah.
And the needles are tiny, 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 and if you try to pull them out, they break. They break off, and I guess what happens is they just end up dissolving in your skin, because today I don't have the problem at all. But, boy, they are irritating while they are there.
And that's an interesting plant and a nasty plant. People down here call it cholla from the Spanish pronunciation. Cholla, but right. it is, to me, it's amazing how adaptive plants have evolved over time, because there are two of them here. One of them, I think they also call Tasajillo, which is just a nasty little thin stem thing that just, Roberta calls it vicious cactus, and that's the best way to describe it. But the one that I think is really interesting is something they call walking cholla. And it has a small pad and has not only the nasty little glaucidia that you're talking about, but has the bigger spines as well. But this little pad is weighted at one end so that when an animal or a person gets it in their pants leg, as you take a step, it flips over. And it flips over again, and it will literally walk up your leg just from, you know, as you take a step, the bottom end comes loose and it flips over. And, you know, a cow or a deer or something like that, they can, you know, lead to some very uncomfortable issues. But it's an interesting, well-adapted plant, but it's not something you want to mess with. I can promise you that.
Well, I was surprised. I didn't even remember running into the thing, but I guess I did. I don't know that it has an ability to throw those little spines at you. That's what they're one of the common names in the case. But anyway, it's one that I highly recommend staying away from. Their new place is near the mountains, where you can go up and see, kind of on the east side of Tucson. You can drive up. It's about an hour drive. Beautiful. But you go through the saguaro forest, you know.
Oh, really?
The end of the Sonoran Desert. And, and it's just fascinating how beautiful the saguaro is. You go up the mountains, and then you get out of that zone, and you go into a different plant zone, and it's grasses. And you go through a grasses area for several miles, and then you start getting into the oaks and some of the larger trees, and then at the top you get into what they call the forest zone, and it's great big pine trees and Douglas firs and everything like that. And the temperature, wow, obviously, you know, is dropping as you go up. It's just fascinating. These are called desert, what do they call them? Desert islands. And you're in the middle of the desert, basically, because of the height change, the elevation change. You go through those different zones, and it's just beautiful. And the top of the mountain, there's snow, still snow all over the ground. So it's pretty fascinating. Anybody that's in the Tucson area, I recommend you take that trip. It's really interesting.
You're making me want to go to Arizona. That's interesting. And of course, with the increase in elevation, sometimes it makes a difference in the amount of rainfall. But it's nature is just endlessly fascinating. I as many years as I've been on this earth, it's just so much fun to see different places and different things. And of course, you've got a great daughter and son-in-law and a good reason to travel, so they're lucky to have you helping with their art, but you're also getting to see some different country and take some interesting pictures. I'm glad you're able to get away and enjoy it. We're kind of stuck in the spring rush in the nursery business, and man, I tell you, yeah, people are so anxious to get out and plant, and it's one of the times of years that I'm alternately a little discouraged, but for the most part, just highly encouraged by the number of people that are making the commitment to go fully organic. And always makes me feel good. And it's a variety of different reasons that they want to do that. But it's kind of a happy time of year because it's so pretty. And I think I sent you some pictures of one of those new petunias I was talking about. And we're seeing some new geranium varieties. Yeah. It's people that think that the plant industry is a static thing that doesn't change. They're sure wrong, because not only are there new products like we get to talk about, but there's sure some pretty new plants coming out as well. But it sounds like you're having a good trip. Have you seen anything? Oh, and the one other thing I meant to tell you, it's one reason that when I'm in the country where I'm dealing with things like your little spines, I always carry some duct tape. Because that's the only way I've ever found to get them out. If you brush up against the wrong thing or you get them in your clothing, you can rub a piece of duct tape over it and pull it off, and on your skin that hurts because it may take a little hair along with it. But it's the only way I've ever found to get those little spines out until they get embedded and eventually go away. I've never had them disappear overnight. I've usually had about a week of misery from them if I don't get them out.
Well, I didn't get that bad a case of them, I guess. I just had enough to be really irritating in a couple of places. I'll be more careful. The most interesting thing that happened on the trip, though, and I'll talk about it on my show so people can listen to the podcast and hear the whole detail, but
sure.
We were coming down the mountain, and we saw this little black and white animal up ahead of us running, going back and forth and just running like crazy, and it dawned on us it was a little dog. And anyway, there's a long story to it that I'll tell, but the bottom line is that I was able to catch the little dog. Logan held it. We took it to a vet. It had been running on the road so long it had worn its nails off, and its feet were blood.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is that we found the owner, and the owner was more than happy to let Logan and Bo keep the dog. They fell in love with it, and their dog, Midgley, fell in love with it too. They hit it off the minute they met. It was just incredible. So
isn't that fun?
I'll give everybody the whole story, and people can hear it on the podcast on dirtdoctor.com.
Well, you know, animals sometimes just have to go through something to find the person that was meant to have them. And That's a good story. I always think about, you know, our friend Dr. Kirby, and you've gotten to know Dan pretty well too, but he used to have, unfortunately he's lost him now, but he or one of his employees found a golden retriever, and this is the absolute most laid-back dog in the world. And when Dan found him, he went over him with a fine-tooth comb trying to find out if the dog was chipped so that he could get the dog back to the owner, and he couldn't find a chip in all the traditional places. Well, like 2 years later, he was doing something with the dog, and he discovered the chip in a very abnormal place. I don't remember where it was, like on the lower leg or something like that. But he managed to track down the owner. He called the original owner, and he said, you know, I'm so sorry to tell you, but I've had your dog for a year and a half because I couldn't find you, but I just wanted to let you know I have your dog if you want him back. And the guy said, oh man, you can keep that dog. That's the wildest, craziest dog I've ever known. And Dan said he was looking at him, and he's just like a big lug there. That wild and crazy is just not the description of Red. So anyway, the animals sometimes take a different journey to get to where they were supposed to be, and it sounds like this is a good story with a very happy ending for the dog as well as for Hugh and Bo and Logan.
Yeah, it was pretty fascinating. The first thing we did was take it to a vet and try to find the chip, and there was none there. And anyway, they hit it off. They've got them a new family member named Rio. The most interesting part about the story is that the little dog stayed. We're not quite sure on the story, either one or two nights out in the forest.
Uh-huh.
And there's coyotes all over the place here. We hear them, you know, yipping and yapping strongly every night. I heard them this morning. But she somehow was able to get into a little spot and curl up and hide herself long enough to stay alive. So anyway,
one of those things that was just meant to be, obviously. Well, I would tell you to tell them the advice that Dr. Kirby would be sure to give is be sure and when they get back to wherever they are with their regular vet to do a tick test, and he would call it the North Carolina tick titer, and have her tested. North Carolina test does like 100 different tick diseases, because he was talking about some people from Arizona, and they have a lot of tick disease in dogs out there, so it would sure be worth spending the money to get a clean bill of health on her, to be sure.
Yeah, that's a good tip. They're going to be going back to Prescott, and they have a vet there. They got a new one here because the vet here, you know, was very helpful and cleaned the little dog and tried to find the chip and all that stuff. But I'll tell them that when they get back to Prescott and their other regular vet to check into that. That's a good tip. They've already run into a couple of days ago, they ran into about a 6-foot rattlesnake close to the house here. And I told them that you and Dr. Kirby recommend that vaccine, I guess, but whatever it is, anti-venom type of a thing you do. And they'll look into that also.
It is a vaccine, and it is like Dr. Kirby says, it doesn't mean the dog won't have to go to the vet if it gets bitten, but it means it will live long enough to get to the vet. And so, yeah, he said he's probably vaccinated 10,000 dogs and never had one bad reaction from the rattlesnake vaccine. So that, I'm glad you brought that up, too. That'll be a good thing for him to know as well. But well, I'm back to the book. I'm glad to hear that it's moving forward. That's going to be a welcome addition to everybody's library. I was talking to somebody earlier, just getting a vegetable garden started, and I tell them the two books that you always need to have on your shelf are the Texas Bug Book and the South Texas Vegetable Book, that both of which you co-authored with Malcolm Beck. And I just consider those absolute must reading for anybody that's getting started into vegetable gardening.
Well, I appreciate it. We get a lot of good feedback from it, and we'll try to make this next book go with those, but cover some other things, especially various kinds of pest control issues in much greater detail than we ever have. Well, I'm going to have to get back to what's going on here and get my art completely finished and pack up and get ready to go back to Dallas. But everybody enjoy that rain that they're getting there. Judy said we had heavy rain, so I hope I didn't have any erosion problems in my big compost area that we've been working on for a long time back in the back. But we'll see later today.
Well, you're so kind to take a little of your Saturday morning with us. And tell Bo and Logan I said hello. Hope to get to see them next time they're down in this part of the country. And as always, safe journey, and thanks for everything you do, Howard. And thanks for taking a little of your Saturday morning with us.
Enjoyed it as always. See you guys next week.
Look forward to it. Thank you. All right. Mr. Howard Garrett is the Dirt Doctor. His website, dirtdoctor.com, truly one place on the Internet you will find reliable information. And the information on there about organic gardening, you know, that applies to all parts of the country, all parts of the world for that matter. The plant information and the disease control, the insect control, things like that. What they talk about in Dallas is basically the same thing we talk about in San Antonio and the Hill Country. So that's the one website that I feel very good about sending you to. Right now, Greg, let's run what we need to in commercials. And if we have time, we'll take a few more phone calls.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening here on KTSA Radio, and looks like we're going to talk to Clint and then Emilio, and Clint is up first. Good morning, Clint.
Good morning. How you doing?
Oh, it's just a rainy morning, and wish it was coming down a little harder and faster, but, you know, I'm just glad to see rain, so good day in my book.
Oh, most definitely. I got 3 bags of growing green down just before the midnight soak, so I'm looking forward to those results.
Your timing was perfect. What's going on today?
Can you give me the lowdown on planting the asparagus again? I didn't quite catch it the last time you talked about it.
Okay. Well, asparagus is planted is what we call crowns. And basically, it's going to be a clump of roots. Usually, they have 4 to 6 nice long roots on them. And then the little crown on the top from which the shoots emerge. Now, we plant things, you know, much more shallow than they do up north. They grow asparagus way up in the United States, but you can, most people will, you know, kind of make a trench. You can also do just individual holes, but you want to plant them so that the ground, so that the top of the crown is maybe half an inch below the level of the ground. If you do like a trench, you can just kind of take and spread the roots out, you know, half in each direction. Put the crown in, you know, fill it in, water it in good. If you want to, you can put a little bit of the growing green or whatever down before you start planting, or you could just follow it up with some of the has to grow plant. But planting's real easy. I usually put the crowns about 18 inches apart, which is going to give them maybe 5 years to grow before you need to spread them out a little bit more again. But plant them, water them. First year, don't harvest anything from them. Just let them come up and make the ferny frond growth. And just keep them, you know, feed them, water them, keep them as healthy as you can. And then next year you'll be able to start harvesting a little, and every year thereafter you'll be able to harvest for a longer period of time. But I guess the most important thing is, if you really like asparagus, each plant is only going to produce one or maybe two shoots a day, and not every day. So I consider, you know, kind of a minimum of 18 to 24 plants if you really want to be able to harvest and eat, because no one plant's going to produce a whole lot at one time. So that's the bad news. You have to plant quite a number of plants. The good news is they're pretty inexpensive, and you don't necessarily have to put them in the garden. They make a real kind of a pretty ferny foliage. So I've known people that just plant them here and there in the flower beds. It just means you have to work a little bit harder to go find the spears, because when they do make the little part that you eat coming up, which if you didn't harvest it, it'd just turn into the ferny growth. But you really have to harvest every day, because those little shoots will sometimes they'll grow 6-8 inches in a day. And if you miss them one day, they may be too big to really eat the next day. You need to go ahead and harvest them anyway. But just be sure you plant plenty of it, Clint. It'll be a great addition to your diet.
Good deal. So 18 inches apart, and how deep on the crown?
Yeah, plant them so the crown is about half an inch below the level of the soil. Like I say, some people dig individual holes and just put the roots straight down. Most people kind of dig a trench and just kind of spread those roots out to each side and then backfill the trench to where the crown's about half an inch under.
Good deal. Okay, well, I appreciate it. That's all I got today.
Well, good question. Hope you continue to get a good rain.
All right, you too. Take care.
All right, thanks so much. I tell you what, Greg, let's take one more call, then we'll take our last break of the show. Let's talk to Emilio. Good morning, Emilio.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
I have a question. I have a big oak tree that shades pretty much of my small front yard.
What is the
best grass with a very minute? I have very just morning sun, basically.
Oh. Well, if you want a grass, your best grass is going to be one of two varieties of St. Augustine. One variety is called Palmetto St. Augustine, P-A-L-M-E-T-T-O. The other is called Delmar St. Augustine, D-E-L-M-A-R. St. Augustine, and those, if you want a grass, those are going to be your best bet. Now, I would also mention, if it's real shady, if you wanted to, you could go with a pretty ground cover like Asiatic jasmine or dwarf mondo grass or something like that. But if you want an actual lawn grass, Palmetto and Del Mar varieties of St. Augustine's are going to be by far your best bet. Don't let anybody tell you it's always your groves in the shade. It doesn't. Bermuda, absolutely not. It needs full hot sun. So if you want grass, get the right variety of St. Augustine, and it'll do beautifully for you.
And those varieties that you mentioned, do they come in and sod?
Yes, that's the only way to plant St. Augustine. Check with one place. What part of town are you in? Let me ask you that first.
I'm in,
or where you look?
Downtown. I'm in the downtown area, just barely south of downtown.
Okay. Your best place to get it is probably going to be, there's a place called Thomas Stone and Landscape. They're in Bull Verde, okay. But they have a material yard that's out near the corner of Redland and 1604. So you can hop on 281 and be out there in 15 minutes. But call and be sure they have it. Don't get it until you're ready to plant it, because grass sod cannot remain stacked. Once you get it, you need to plant it the day you get it. But if it's a big area, I'm sure they'd deliver it to you. Otherwise, you can borrow a truck and pick it up. But Thomas Stone has had some of the best grass I've seen lately.
Thomas Stone. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much, sir. Appreciate it.
I appreciate your call this morning. You have a wonderful weekend. And, Greg, let's run our last commercial break, and we'll talk to George when we get back.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening. I understand Martin is going to be live today, so be getting your questions ready for the Home Improvement Show here on KTSA Radio. And, of course, he'll start right after the news at the top of the hour. Right now we've got about 10 minutes to talk to George and Mike, so that should work out well. George is up first. Good morning, George.
Good morning. How you doing?
Off to a good start.
I just got a quick question.
Yeah.
What can I use to kill that bull nettle stuff?
Is it in pasture? Is it in your yard? Where is it?
I'm sorry?
Where is it in your yard? Is it out in a pasture? Where are you trying to kill it?
No, it's in my yard.
Okay. What we would recommend is using the strong vinegar, 20% vinegar, which you'll get at a farm store or a nursery or somewhere. A gallon of vinegar, add 2 ounces of orange oil to it. Orange oil is like a real strong solvent made by Medina. Has a lot of other uses as a cleaner and other things. But a gallon of strong vinegar, 2 ounces of orange oil, a little bit of dish soap, and maybe just a teaspoon or so of molasses. You'll want to spray it on the bull nettle. And what I do is I just carry a piece of cardboard with me so I can, you know, hold that up to where I can spray the weed I'm trying to kill without getting it on the grass and things around, because it will burn back any green vegetation. But that will normally kill your bull nettle with just one application.
Oh, great. Okay, I appreciate that. You know, I don't have really any grass out here where I'm at, but I'm particular about my weeds. I want nice green weeds.
Yeah, and things that don't sting you when you get into them. if you don't feel like you need a full gallon, just mix up a quart or so, because you're not interested in soaking the roots. All you want to do is just coat the foliage on the plant. And once you've mixed your vinegar and orange oil together, it doesn't keep for long. So you need to mix up whatever you need. But if you need to pretty much spray it all. So it might do just as well just to do a quart of the strong vinegar and, you know, about a teaspoon and a half of the orange oil, and just make up a little bit less. Of course, you can use it to kill any kind of green weeds, and if you've got an area where you don't have any grass, that's real easy. If you're spraying up against, I used to spray underneath rose bushes, and I just hold my cardboard up, because it doesn't go through the roots. You just want to keep it off the foliage of plants you want to protect. Get it on the foliage of the plants you want to be rid of, and it's a whole lot safer than those toxic chemicals, and it sure works well. You might wait until we get some sunshine. We're looking at a good chance of rain, I understand, through about the first half of today, and you don't want to wash it off right after you spray it on. So be a good project to tackle when the sun comes out.
I appreciate that so much. Thank you. You guys
You're
have
welcome.
A great day.
Hey, you do the same, George. Thanks so much for the call this morning. All right, next Bye-bye. In line is Mike. Good morning, Mike. Are you there, Mike?
I turned into drizzle, but it's all wet.
Well, every bit of wet is welcome around our place, and I probably imagine around yours as well.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Bob, I've lost all of my plants to the cold. I kept heat lamps on them, on the bottom, on the roots, and on the foliage both, and I've just, they've all gone. They're just, now the Jatropha will come back out, I think, from the bottom.
Probably, but, yes.
I'm wondering about a philodendron. Is it too early to put a philodendron out?
Well, tell me what the weather's going to do. typically, I've never say normally because it doesn't apply to Texas weather, but typically by the middle of March, we're going to have some more cold weather, but probably not have another hard freeze. So if we're talking about Philadelphia and Siloam, I think I would put it out. Just be maybe wait 2 or 3 days because it looks like we've got 2 or 3 cold nights, and then we're going to be back into much more spring-like weather. So I get your philodendron. Wait about 3 days, and then you should be able to plant it and be safe.
Do you have any over there at Shades of Green?
Oh, we've got beautiful ones. Yeah, no doubt. We've got real pretty ones.
Okay. I have another question about what Dr. Kirby was, the dirt doctor,
yeah,
was talking about the rattlesnake venom.
Uh-huh.
Maybe I should ask Dr. Kirby, but I wanted to know about the venom. Could that be obtained by from a vet or for an individual to have on hand?
It's a vaccine, and it's not something what we were talking about is not the actual antivenom that the veterinarian would use if a dog has been bitten. This is a vaccine that lets the dog build some antibodies against the venom. Venom is just basically a real powerful digestive enzyme. And I would hesitate to tell you that it's something that you would want to administer the anti-venom at home. Now, vaccine, maybe, maybe not. It's not like rabies that absolutely mandatory has to be given by a vet. But if you have a dog you want to protect, you typically give 2 initial shots 2 weeks apart, and then it's just a once-a-year booster after that. And it's one of those things that it just is kind of life insurance for your dog. If your dog does get bitten, the vet's not just going to give antivenom. They're usually going to put the dog on an IV because they want to flush as much of the venom out of the system as possible, and may give them a couple of other supporting drugs. So treating a rattlesnake bite at home is not really a do-it-yourself project, but the anti-venom vaccine that you can do, it's just a good idea for, you know, any dogs that are out in the country. Now, I'll be honest, I have a 15-year-old lab, and she's, she's getting a little arthritic, and she's not out running through the woods the way she usually does. And I asked Dr. Kirby about this last week, and he said probably wouldn't overload her system with the vaccine. She's not likely to encounter a snake. But younger dogs, it can certainly be a lifesaver. And we don't have many copperheads here. I've seen probably 3 of them on my ranch in all the years that I've been there. But if a dog should encounter a copperhead, then the vaccine also protects against copperheads, also protects against cottonmouth water moccasins, does not do anything against coral snakes. But the 3 pit vipers, the one vaccine protects against all 3 of those.
That was another question I was going to ask about copperheads. And I know there's nothing for coral snakes. How about for human beings? Would that be the same venom? Inoculation for a human?
I don't think it's cleared as a preventive for humans. Again, the FDA, has to get after all these things. And after it's been used in dogs for about 50 years, then the FDA will probably decide it's okay for humans. Humans, of course, are less likely to get bitten. Doesn't mean it's not going to happen. Happened to me back in my junior high school days, but it wasn't a bad bite, thank goodness. But I'm not aware of any vaccine on a preventive basis, but as a human bite, there are steps you can take. The recommendations change a little bit from year to year, but old Dr. Tom Glass here in San Antonio pioneered a lot of the early treatments, but I don't think the vaccine's available or recommended for humans at this point, Mike.
It would have to be kept refrigerated anyway, I assume.
I would imagine so. I would imagine so. And like I say, the treatment after the bite, that's not a do-it-yourself thing because the veterinary or the medical community, they're going to combine the antivenom, and that has to be very, appropriately given as far as dog weight versus the amount of antivenom. But they're going to give them supportive care like IV fluids to flush the venom out and things like that. So Good question, though, and a good thing to bring up, because we're just about to get into snake season once again. And even in San Antonio, people have encountered rattlesnakes in some of our bigger parks around town, too. So people that walk their dogs should talk to their vet about that vaccine.
Well, I thank you for all the information, and I know you don't have much time, but I was thinking mainly of my grandkids and myself.
You'll just need to be careful. And I got to go. It's time for Martin Bamba here on KTSA Radio.